Mrs. Bernstein. Before we get started, I think we're all aware of the tragedy and what's gone on in France and in other parts of the world, so I'd like to have a moment of silence for all the victims of terrorism. Thank you. Do we have the high school representative here? Come on down.
Now he's on? Okay. Oh. All right, so recently, and by recently I mean Saturday, we finished the production of The Miracle Worker, which all's well, done's well, I suppose. I'm a little biased because I was in the cast, so. At the show, we raised money for the school musical, The Little Mermaid. You could have won a free ticket if you bought a small fish, not a real fish. When I first heard they were selling fish, I was extremely confused. But just a little paper fish. That week, we were also raising money for the St. Jude's Research Facility through various activities such as pizza sales and raising and wearing red to raise awareness for the research hospital. We managed to raise a reasonable amount of money. The quarter ended. Successful quarter. It'd be nice if I could speak. So we had a successful end to the first quarter. Last Friday was the POB family night, the first ever. There was also a blood drive on Thursday. Thursday was the blood drive. And that we had the most student donators. Yeah, that's the word, donators. About 150, around that number, give or take. And today is the DECA Financial Literature Day, where student representatives will go to the younger schools and teach about financial literacy. And that's the high school's little shebang for this week.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Do we have anyone from the middle schools here? Just going to give him a sec. There he is. Come on down. Give us your name. Has he done this before? Do we know him? Have you done this before?
Yeah.
I thought so.
Hi, I'm Christian Lamantia. Good evening. As we close out the first quarter of the school year, the middle schools have shared a number of activities and are truly in the giving spirit. Seventh grade career day took place on November 12th at Matlin Middle School. In preparation for this event, students from POB and Matlin took career surveys on the Navient Family Connection site to find their career matches. Students were able to interact and speak with professionals based on their areas of interest in many fields, including human services, finance, marketing, health sciences, and armed forces. The students also participated in Career Family Feud, an exciting round of What's My Line, working together to guess who the mystery career guest was. The guest of honor, Mr. Josh Henkel, a camp director, shared with the students what his job entails and how he came to find his career path. Our students left with a deeper understanding of career possibilities and enjoyed a day of fun and learning. Digital Citizenship Week occurred last week in the district. This week is dedicated to educating students and continuing the dialogue in our community surrounding responsible and informed internet usage. Complete with map activities, grade-wide assemblies, and building-wide posters, and video contests as well as library and digital passport activities, there is something for everyone. Students were exposed to the severe truths regarding the internet and its power, as well as the positive aspects of technology and responsible internet use. We completed our Pride and Spirit card sales, raising a ton of money to support both our schools and our community. Students and staff enjoyed Minion Madness, and we are so proud to have partnered with H2O for Life, an organization which helps students struggling in developing nations in need of water and sanitation. The Ogeni Junior Grammar School, located in Nigeria, is in desperate need of water. The school shares one unprotected hand-dug well with the senior secondary school, which is not safe for drinking or sufficient for other purposes. The 431 students have no toilet. Over 100 students contributed to this worthy cause. In honor of Veterans Day, Matlin Middle School Service Club created their cards for servicemen and women. One of our club members went to visit her sister, who's in the Navy, and stationed on a ship off the coast of Florida. She had the opportunity to hand-deliver cards and hero bracelets to all the personnel on the ship. On November 10th, POB held their annual Veterans Tea, celebrating the brave men and women who served our country and protected our freedom. All MAP groups participated in this event by creating placemats and writing thank you cards for our vets. MAP groups also worked together to collect items to donate to the Beacon House. With students and staff working together, we were able to purchase 12 twin sheets and 11 twin blankets. It is truly heartwarming to see such generosity at work. MAP leadership groups worked tirelessly, baking goodies and serving their deliciously made treats, complete with full serving attire, aprons and all. It was so moving to see the students interacting with these remarkable people. Hearing stories of war, including one veteran story of how he earned a Purple Heart, was awe-inspiring for our students. We were so happy to serve those who served us. The Matlin Tag Club is collecting new and unwrapped toys for their second annual toy drive to benefit children at Cohen's Children's Hospital. In addition, Ms. Lacano, Ms. Epstein, Ms. Burt, and Ms. Curran are collecting new and unused gifts for their annual Little Flower Gift Drive in memory of Linda Rosen. POB is running a food drive through our Leo Club and a school-wide candy drive. Leo Club is collecting non-perishable food items in the front lobby to send over to our soup kitchens. Our school-wide candy drive focuses on using leftover Halloween candy for a great cause. Our soldiers. Candy and other sweets will be collected and sent over to our soldiers overseas so they can enjoy a treat as well. POB and Matlin wish everyone a wonderful Thanksgiving. We'll see you in December. Thank you.
All right. Board announcements. Emily?
I guess it was a week and a half ago, the POB high school's volleyball team played in the Nassau County Championships, both actually the boys and the girls. And unfortunately, both of them lost into the same team for maximum irritation. But those of us who were there, it was a really exciting, wonderful match. And, you know, it was 2 hours in one case of really sort of grueling playing. So congratulations to them and all the teams who played in the playoffs. Well done.
Debbie?
On Friday night, many of us had the opportunity to attend the Plainview All Beth Page John F. Kennedy High School's Drama Cadet performance of The Miracle Worker. And I really want to congratulate Mr. Weinstock, Mr. Olivari, and all the students and staff who were involved with this production. They did such a fabulous job. It was truly amazing. It's very hard to perform in a drama. Somehow, it's, I think, even more difficult than the musical. They really did a great job, so I wanted to congratulate them all.
Well, go back, Emily.
All right. A number of us attended SEPTA Night Out at the beginning of the month, and it was a great occasion. Hoping it raised a lot of money, and you know, it's always good to have people out there supporting the school districts, people involved with special needs.
No, just go around.
What I found amazing at the Miracle Worker also was the ASL students on the side of the stage that would literally sign the entire play. which was amazing to me. My whole family was there, my youngest being 7, who also just, you could stare at them. It was as amazing to me as the amazing performers on the stage. So kudos to the ASL students that were on the side of the stage signing literally the entire play.
Emily?
Sorry I'm being so chatty this evening, but I wanted to give a somewhat belated report on the NISPA conference in October, although these many weeks ago, just because sometimes what we pick up there is so valuable. Even if it's not new, it might reinforce things that really need reinforcing. And one was a talk by Professor Josh Aronson, who's a professor of applied psychology at NYU, and what he focused on was identity threat and stereotype threat, which is the threat that you're under that your identity will confirm a stereotype of something negative about you or your identity group, like lack of intelligence or competence, and the effects that has on student learning, among other things, which makes common sense. If we're threatened or feel that we're under attack in some way, we find it harder to be intelligent and curious, and that's across the board. And you know, he cited a bunch of kind of interesting statistics about Asian engineering grad students at Stanford who were given a test that was supposed to measure math ability. That was fine because there wasn't, you know, sort of stereotype threat that, oh, this is something that the stereotype is that, you know, you're not going to perform as well on. If they were told the test was to see how well Asian students did at Stanford, which might have aroused some anxiety, that shaved off a standard deviation from their performance. And this comes into play a great deal on high-stakes tests. You know, for example, girls, the stereotype threat might be that, oh, they're not as good at math. So if they're sort of reminded of this stereotype threat, they tend to perform much worse. And this affects all kinds of things, really kind of interesting examples. And it can affect things like physical endurance, like how hard you can grip something if you're under stereotype threat, and willpower. So in the gender role experiment with math, it wasn't just that girls proceeded to do poorly on math tests. They also found their willpower decreasing and would go out and eat a lot more ice cream afterwards, which sounds kind of funny, but you know, it also fits with, if any of you are familiar with the marshmallow test, whether kids can put off grabbing that, you know, you get more marshmallows if you're able to wait longer, and some kids don't, and it's supposed to be linked to success and all kinds of things. But one of the things, and this is the part where it did start to hit home for me, was some of this filters down into the school environment. So if you have lower self-control, you know, maybe you won't have grit and persistence. And a lot of this will relate in terms of fear, maybe not stereotype threat. Maybe you feel that your environment is unstable or unsafe. And if students, for example, feel that the adults around them are untrustworthy, they're going to tend to eat that marshmallow right away, which makes sense adaptively, right? You don't trust the people around you. How do you know that they're going to let you have the extra marshmallows later on? So you're going to want to get what you can get right away. So when we're evaluating students on all kinds of things, as we like to do, we're often evaluating the quality of their environments, their relationships, and their schools. And this is the kind of thing I think people tend to think of social-emotional things as squishy in some ways, or, you know, oh, that's nice, and it'll help them develop social skills, but it really affects the entire child. And he also spoke about two things you can look at in terms of environment. One was positive atmosphere, and the other one was effectiveness. And he gave examples of two places that were high and low in both. So the DMV, kind of low in positivity and effectiveness, people don't like to be there. An Apple store, on the other hand, people want to be there. So one of the things that he pointed out was that for low-income students, a lot of the time, school is kind of more like the DMV than the Apple store. So you want it to be more like the Apple store. And the example that he had was of a school, an elementary school in Maryland, which had been extremely low-performing, one of the lowest-performing in the state. And when a principal came in who worked on building an environment of trust, the results were extremely dramatic. If you like test scores, and some of us do, they had test scores, very high ones. And there weren't discipline problems. anymore. And, you know, it was pretty dramatic. And it wasn't just those golden years. Like, that's nice. They're around the principal. They're in this nice, safe environment of trust and everything. But he did a bit of a longitudinal study. Those results that lasted for years through middle school and high school. And that was about having a culture at the school of that emphasized that trust. So as I said, one of the things that he did talk about that I think is really worth thinking about is that safe environment isn't just something that's nice and that we can talk about and that's fuzzy. It's that it's crucial, and it's helping them learn to be the best they can and become people who can reach their full potential in all aspects. So, you know, it was one of the talks that I actually walked out of feeling, you know, inspired, like, yes, you know, look at what a difference that kind of environment can make in students' lives.
Thank you. I know last Thursday we had family night, and I think it's a fun thing that the district does. I know I played board games with my daughter at home, but I also know that this year, because of the late start and because the marking period ended, it did create a little bit of a, let's say, a backlog of testing where a lot of kids had tests on either the Thursday of family night or the Tuesday before, because it was also Wednesday off. So I just want to acknowledge to the community, we realized that the timing wasn't as great as it could be, and we'll look into that a little bit harder to make sure it doesn't coincide with the end of the marking period. But I do think it's a nice thing that we do for our community, and I know I spoke to a lot of parents who really enjoyed either going out to dinner with their family, which is something that not enough do, you know, sitting together with our family and playing games and things like that. So hopefully it's a tradition that'll continue, and once again, apologies for any inconveniences that it may have created. Superintendent announcements.
I just want to update the community on Dr. Lewis's condition. She was able to go home, and she is out of rehab as of Friday. She was actually able to make a visit to the district last week, and she's really doing very well. She's up on her feet. She's walking with a walker at this point in time. She's very energized to get back, and I expect we'll see her back before the holiday break, probably as soon as probably another couple weeks, 2 weeks. So I think we'll see her in and out a little bit. But again, she sends her regards to everyone and wishes everybody a happy Thanksgiving. I want to give out... Lori Lynn is here, our guidance director, and I just want to thank Lori for the work that she did putting our Digital Citizenship Week together along with the counselors. A lot of times we give kudos to our staff and they're not here, but Lori, you did a phenomenal job, and it is so essential that those skills are hit at every grade level, and this is the first year we actually brought it down to the elementary grades, and I know that the parents and the teachers felt very strongly about the topics that you had chosen, especially in light of some of the things that are going on in society, especially with social media. So again, thank you very much for your contributions and really spearheading it. I'd also want to just say thank you to the SNAP organization. They held their annual fundraiser last week, and we had our administrators and teachers attend. There were over, I believe, 200 and something families in attendance last week. They contributed a considerable amount of money to the district and our students, and I just want to thank that organization. They couldn't be more grateful for the programs and services. And many families got up that night to speak about how appreciative they are of the district and what we've been able to provide their children. So again, thank you to the organization if anyone's here tonight. And then the last thing I just want to share is an email that came across my desk from the two Project Challenge teachers. They took their fifth graders to the UN, and I just want to share the contents of the email. We were able to observe meetings in session, and the students were thrilled to sit in the seats of the General Assembly and Security Council rooms and tour the impressive exhibits. The kids were truly awestruck. In the afternoon, we were fortunate to have been accepted to a special briefing session on climate change and water scarcity, usually available only to high school students. In our application for this session, we assured the briefings department they would be impressed with our kids and that they would be prepared. And they were. We had a great deal of time We had spent a great deal of time learning about the functions and goals of the UN. Our kids really stepped up, answering every question intelligently and asking insightful, appropriate questions. The briefing also focused on the UN and how it helps provide education for children in underdeveloped countries, and this tied in beautifully with our global economics curriculum this year and our reading of Malala's memoir. Both our tour guide and briefing speaker gave us such complimentary feedback about the behavior and knowledge of our students. They said they rarely get students so well prepared and engaged, especially at this age. So again, thank you to our teachers for bringing that experience to our students, and I know we'll be hearing more about it. And then the last congratulations goes out to Guy Ladico, our technology director. He is receiving a special recognition from the NICE Game organization for his really years and years of commitment to that organization. He's served as director, assistant director, a couple different roles in that position. So again, congratulations to Guy for the award. I don't know if he's here tonight. Can't see, but
maybe after. I think he's up there in Rochester now, but maybe when he comes back, we can invite him and congratulate him from the board. Okay, we got a couple of big events to talk about. The first is we have a retirement recognition.
Is Virginia Cipolla here? Hi, Virginia. Can you come up? Okay. Virginia Garrett, you want to come up this way? Sure.
Hello, Virginia.
Hi, Peter. Hi, everybody.
Come on right in here. Okay.
All right, so I probably need my glasses here. So whereas the Plainview Old Beth Central School District is considered one of the nation's premier public school systems, where community and district expectations of its staff are at the highest level. And whereas Virginia Cipolla exemplified the highest standards of professionalism as a stenographic secretary in the central offices of the Plainview Old Bethpage Central School District from 1987 to 2015, and during this time has helped to maintain district and public confidence in its professional staff. And whereas Virginia Cipolla served the Plainview Old Bethpage Central School District for 28 years through challenging and demanding times under two people personnel directors, six superintendents, eight assistant superintendents, and whereas Virginia Cipolla worked with dedication to ensure the central office was equipped to respond to all public inquiries, including Common Core implementation, opt-out, delayed opening, school closings, and whereas her commitment and attention to detail ensured that all communication from the superintendent's office, including newsletters, principal evaluations, flyer approvals, and daily correspondence, was expertly done, timely, and error-proofed. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Board of Education and the superintendent express their appreciation to Virginia Cipolla for contributions to the Plainview Old Bethpage Central School District and wish her good health and happiness in her retirement years. The next person I'd like to introduce is Joe Braco. He's here for a tenure recommendation. And I just want to acknowledge Joe's family who is here tonight also. His wife and Allie and Gabby, I think, are back there somewhere. I don't think anyone heard them, but...
So I'm going to speak on Joe's behalf for Dr. Lewis tonight. Dr. Lewis sends her congratulations, first of all. But later on this evening, you'll be voting on a recommendation for tenure for Mr. Joseph Braco. In his 3 years here, he has taken on many challenges and has helped grow our programs, whether it's a grading committee for physical education or looking at the programs to enhance them and add additional activities, bringing guest speakers in for health classes, or just guiding our coaches and moving forward, adding Coaches vs. Cancer Week, fundraisers for charity, changing the award ceremonies, adding the Hawk Award and other things. Joe is looking from one view and one view only, what is in the best interest of the students, both academically and athletically. In my year and a half of working with Joe, he has constantly maintained one thing, that our students, athletes, are students first and then athletes. And that's an important distinction because, as anybody who's worked in schools knows, sometimes students can get lost in co-curricular activities and in coaching and so and in playing sports. But by emphasizing the academic end, what you end up with are not only outstanding athletic programs, but academic programs that thrive. And having our school district recognized as a scholar-athlete school and all of our teams as scholar-athlete schools is a great accomplishment. Joe, on behalf of Dr. Lewis, I want to wish you congratulations. I want to wish you congratulations on this recommendation. I'm sure the vote will be positive. but you've done a great job, and we look forward to many more years of working.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Dan.
Joe, you know, normally we give flowers, but we felt that since you're the athletic director, we'd let you show off a little bit. So we have this special gift from you.
We're up to date on insurance, right? Yeah.
Makes me nervous.
Uh-oh. All right. Autographed by the Board of Ed, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Do I speak now?
Yeah. The last 3 years has been absolutely tremendous for me, and I appreciate everything that the opportunities that you have given me to work in this wonderful school district. It has been absolutely fantastic. The ability to work in the same town that I live in, to be working with wonderful colleagues that I have and wonderful teachers and wonderful parents, and seeing what we have been able to grow here has been absolutely fantastic. And it's a privilege to work in this town. It's my privilege to work for you. It's not the other way around. So I just want to say thank you for everything that you have done for me and for my family, because without you guys, Allison would not be here. So so we thank you for that. And to my family, I thank you too. Bye.
And we'll jump out of order now. Do we have a motion to accept the tenure recommendation for Mr. Braco? Debbie? Emily? He made the catch. So all those in favor? All right. Thank you. Great job. Brings us to the first part of our program, new course proposals. Before we even get started, we have a lot of people here, obviously. I'm really going to ask that everyone please be courteous to the speakers, give them a chance to present, and allow the board to have their discussions about the new topics as well. Just please be courteous in the audience.
At this time, I'd like to ask Mr. Murray to join us up at the podium here, our makeshift podium for now, and then Jim is going to ask the different supervisors of the departments to join him as the topics come up. For the public tonight, there were copies made of the new course proposals, what we call tweaks, which are just modifications to some of the courses, and also the flow charts for each of the departments. Yeah, so for purposes of tonight's proposals, these are the first proposals that the board is first seeing of these. The presentation is done tonight by all of the department leaders. From this, the topics then get shared with the curriculum committee upon return from the Thanksgiving break. After that, there's a PTA meeting that's held on December 17th, where parents have another opportunity to hear more about the proposals. And then I just ask that the board vote on the proposals on the December 23rd meeting after the public participation. That would give us two rounds of public participation before, and that way that, you know, we have some time to talk through this.
We'll ask questions each section when they're done presenting with the presenter. Okay. Cool.
Thank you, Mr. Batan. Good evening, everybody. Thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to present our new courses and as well as our modified courses that we'd like to present to you tonight. This seems like a process that we work on throughout the year. It's not just something that that comes about within the first month or two of the school year. We actually take the courses that were proposed in the prior year that maybe we didn't end up bringing here, revisiting them, as well as taking a look at other courses that are currently in existence and seeing if we want to make any kind of modifications to any of them. We work with the department leaders. The department leaders work with the teachers in their departments, of course, and the teachers work by getting feedback, generating interest and feedback from the students to see what they're really interested in taking. So it's really a process that involves the whole school. At this point in time, I would like to introduce Mr. Ben Wiley to come up as our director of art. Oh. It's not hooked up, he said.
What?
It's not hooked up to the system outside. So I'm going to introduce Mr. Wiley. He has two courses in particular that he'd like to present to you at this time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me tonight. Before I begin, I just want to mention that I've had the privilege to work with a great group of art educators my first few months here. And through department meetings and course meetings, these proposals have come up, and we've had discussions about them. And truly, the future and current needs of the students are at the forefront. So the first course proposal is slightly a little bit of a tweak because we do have an animation design course and also a web design course. The two courses are currently two half-year sections. They're run in the fall and they're run in the spring. The thought that came about and the discussion I had with the art teachers is that students weren't having enough time to really master these subjects in this short period of time. So the first idea was to create these courses in a way that there would be a sequence. Being a former teacher myself of students who did animation and gaming and website design, they're a rare breed. So after these first two half-year courses, there was really nowhere for them to go within the curriculum. So we combined the two half-year sections, or the proposal is to combine the two half-year sections into one full-year course called Animation, Gaming, and Website Design 1, and this would then be followed by Animation, Gaming, and Website Design 2, two full-year courses. Yes. On to the tweaks of the department. The first one was to the Photography 1 course description and the course description only. Currently, we have a full-year Photo 1 section followed by Photo 2, Darkroom, and Photo 2, Digital Photography. Those are both full-year courses. The students, after Photo 1, decide which pathway they decide to take. Currently in Photo 1, the time is split between darkroom techniques and digital photography techniques, but it wasn't properly in the course description. It wasn't described that way. So we made a tweak modifying the course description, saying that the content of this course will be equally split between digital photography and traditional darkroom techniques. So that's a tweak to the Photo 1 course description. And the next tweak was to the ceramics and jewelry and sculpture course, which is a half-year course that hasn't run in the last couple of years. And there was some discussion throughout the department about the name of the course in general. Although jewelry is a unit or a lesson within this course, it didn't really warrant being in the title of the course itself. So the tweak is to the title. This course description stays the same, but the proposal would be to change the course title to ceramics and sculpture.
Thank you. Do you have any questions for Mr. Wiley?
I just
want to know, how are numbers this year as students participating in our classes in general?
Yeah, all of these courses for the modifications and the new courses are enrolled fully, except for ceramics, jewelry, and sculpture. There wasn't enough interest this year for a section to run. In the department in general, that's one of the sections that I'm most concerned about, because the 3D component to the curriculum isn't really being represented. So hopefully this tweak will elicit some more enrollment from students.
Especially the jewelry component, because that really could be a startup for a kid. You can do an online type of thing, and maybe there's some ways that we could work with our business department to really try to market it and do some kind of a show or something where the kids really get to show, you know, the stuff that they're doing, because it's such a wonderful entrepreneurial.
Yeah, absolutely. Jewelry will still be in the course. It's a section of the sculpture.
Okay, thank you.
This course, we actually added jewelry to the title, if you recall. I think it was 2 years ago, and we think actually it's a deterrent from taking the course right now because it's in the title. And so although, as Mr. Wiley has said, jewelry will still be covered, but I think there was a population of kids that thought it was too jewelry-focused, and as a result, we really want to get back to the whole 3D component of it with the ceramics and sculpture, which we know there's a large interest from students. So I just want to be clear on that reason.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Next, I'd like to invite Ms. Sharon Lasher from the Business Department to just present a couple of modifications to courses that she currently has running.
Thank you. Good evening. As you know, we've ran Principles of Law 1, Principles of Law 2, Principles of Law 3, and 4 for the last, 30-something years, and they've always been a half year each. Principles of Law 1 ran in the fall, 2 in the spring, 3 in the fall, 4 in the spring. They really are full-year courses with a false pause in between them, and at this time we'd like to propose that Principles of Law becomes a full-year course, followed by Advanced Principles of Law for the second year. It's the same content, same material. There really is no pause, and there should be no pause halfway through. So we'd like to propose that they become two full-year courses with Principles of Law, the prerequisite for Advanced Principles of Law. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lasher. Next, I'd like to introduce Mr. Bowen, who will present the modifications to mathematics.
Good evening. The course I made a minor tweak to is the advanced computer programming course. We currently integrate C++ and HTML, and we'd actually like to continue with the C++ and build off Python. That seems to be a more up-and-coming language. We want to provide our students an opportunity to see that. And in addition, the Computer Science Principles course, which was proposed and passed last year, will become AP next year. So as part of that, we'd like to support the work that's being done with that by incorporating Python the year earlier. And that's about it. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Bowen. Next, we'd like to introduce Mr. Braco, who will present the physical education modifications, or new courses, I should say.
Hello. Tonight, we're proposing several changes, slight changes to our yoga program. Currently, we have a yoga program that runs from 9th through 12th grade. We would like to split that into a beginner's yoga program and an advanced yoga program, with the idea that the advanced yoga program will be more of a technique and it really to expand the person's knowledge of true yoga and move from there, and it can go at a little faster pace as well. The core fitness is a program that we'll be using. So it will be a weight training program. They'll be in the yoga studio, but we'll be using bars and light weights and other strength training programs. They'll incorporate some other core fitness type activities for people. The lifeguard training one is one that we would like to propose to use the pool. This class would be follow the American Red Cross training program. The students would be gearing them to pass the certification, but the recertification process will not be part of the class. It will be something that the students can go on the outside and get. It's not required to pass the course. and those are the changes that we'd like to make.
But taking that class will prepare them to pass the course?
Yes. Sorry. Yes, everything that we'll do in that course will be to build their muscular strength, muscular endurance, to prepare, to increase their swimming ability or anything that would go in line that they would need to pass that course, pass that class at the end.
Okay, and the certification to be a lifeguard, how does that work?
You would have to go through a program that would be able to certify that themselves. We would not be one of those locations where someone can get certified here on site, so they would have to go to an off-site. We would provide them locations similar to if someone was taking a PSAT prep course here in the town. They would have to go to an outside location to take the SATs. This would be a similar. We would basically be guiding them, getting them ready to take the certification, and then we would provide them opportunities if they wanted to be certified at an outside location.
Yeah, I want to say, Debbie, I think we run an EMT class similar to this, so the information is provided to students about the certification. However, we're not affiliated with the certification for the EMT class. So again, similar to this class, we would be preparing students with the requirements in terms of the swimming, the strength activities as part of that in order to prepare them to actually take the exam, if interested, outside of school.
But the certification would have nothing to do with passing the course. The course is our own internal course, our own internal instructors, and then if you choose to try to pursue certification, you can, and we'll help tell you where and what you need to do, but we're just basically teaching the principles of life saving.
Yes. I mean, this is first and foremost a physical education class. So we're going to be teaching how to build your swim endurance, muscular endurance, your strength endurance to be able to pass that certification. But first and foremost, it's a physical education class that will follow our grading policy. So the passing or taking the certification will not be part of that.
Have you mentioned the staffing?
The staffing itself would also be someone that would be lifeguard trained certified. So the person teaching the courses will know how will be certified in that area. We have one person within district, but there's a current staff member up at the high school that is willing to be trained as well to be a part of it as well.
Congratulations again.
Okay. It would just, at this point, I don't think it says on this sheet, but open to the 11th and 12th graders.
Next, we'd like to introduce Mrs. Joyce Thornton Barry from the Science Department.
Thank you. Good evening. We start with tweaks first. Okay, so we have three courses here that, in the case of two, it's just a change of name. The first is the, currently we call it Integrated Science. We're proposing that we change the name of that to Applied Sciences. Conversations with the teachers, looking over the curriculum, it really does more lend itself to the explanation of being the applied sciences, where the students are taking the different physics and chemistry components and practicing them as opposed to combining the two, where the integrated science explanation implies that you're combining the two together. The description goes with the practice of the chemistry and the physics at a more basic household level. Like sports physics, household chemistry, things of that effect. So that's the applied science is the proposal there. The other name change, this comes into play where we offer AP Environmental Science, which is a totally different course. We also offer the Environmental Science, which is the non-AP course. We found over the last 2 years that students are not enrolling for the regular Environmental Science course, we believe because they're intimidated and think there's a connection with the AP. So when you look at the course description and what's taught in that class, it really is the science of Long Island, the geology of Long Island, environmental impact, and those components. So the teachers proposed, and I agree very wholeheartedly, that changing that name would help the enrollment in that class and bring those students in who really need that extra year of science and are interested in it but don't want to take that AP class. So that name change is pretty clear. The biotechnology class that we started last year has been very successful. The content in that class, we currently offer that class as a half credit. The content in that class is massive. And what we're trying to do is run labs, PCR, gel electrophoresis, all those kind of labs, but we're trying to run them every other day. The nature of those labs really are on an everyday basis. So when they're going in to do the lab, they're supposed to be checked on within 24 hours. So what's happening now is when the teacher teaches the class, let's say on a Monday, he looks at the sample, he or she, because we're now running two sections of that class, they look at the samples on the following day, the Tuesday, and then they have to just report out to the kids what happened or take photographs. So really the nature of the course and the volume of the material really lends itself to a full credit. And as we look, and the colleges and the hospital are really very interested in our students taking that biotechnology, because that's where it's one of the big emerging STEM fields. So those are the tweaks that are suggested for science. Moving forward with the district initiative of pushing forward in our STEAM initiative, the science and the technology departments, in conjunction with Mr. Bowen, we discussed different opportunities to look for integrated courses between the different curriculums. Two courses came. We actually had a running list in the office of about 12 different courses, and they moved up and down. So aeronautics was the most popular and the most fitting. The aeronautics course would lend the students to aviation engineering, where they would work on both the physics of it as well as the technology component. It would be a one-credit course that would be taught by half-time science and half-tech. So on the science teacher would teach it the content piece, and the tech teacher would teach the application. So the plan would be to roll that out in a co-taught manner. It should be one full credit. It's a half credit taught by each teacher. So for the student, it's one full credit. Okay? And then the green technology class. Yeah,
I
go ahead.
I just asked a question only because when I was at the NISBA school boards, I attended a very interesting session, and it was about drones. And when I saw this class being added, obviously,
I'm sure
someone's going to think about, we need some drones for this, you know, to
they
get
have
kids
to be very
it.
Small, though. They had an announcement today on the size before they have to get registered.
Well, there's a lot of laws and regulations with drones that go beyond just the scope of flying something. And I think if we're going to put this course in and we're thinking it's going to go in that direction, then we need to get a actual drone policy to look at for the class, just because when we were at the conference, they walked into privacy issues, accident causing, drones falling out of the air on someone. Where can you do it? If you're flying the drone and you're standing on school property, but the drone isn't. If you're standing outside of school property, but the drone's in school property. So I saw this course. I said, I know they're going to ask us for money for drones, so I think we have to address that policy before we go forward with that. Not the course, but that request.
I got it.
Yeah, I attended the same panel discussion as Gary, and in the policy committee, we've already started discussing different new policies, emerging policies, and one of them was drones. There is no school district that has a drone policy currently.
Yes.
But we also want to... You know, one of the concerns we have is protecting the school property and the air around it, but also allowing our students the ability to explore the use of it. So,
exactly.
Conversation, yeah. I guess, to be continued.
Yeah.
So.
And the plan would be, as we build the curriculum, is also to work with Molloy at Republic Airport. They have the college course. Farmingdale has some. There are very few schools, if any, that run a course similar to this, and it would be more on a historical basis as well, taught with the science and the tech teacher, starting with basics, and then move up to rocketry, and then inevitably into the drones, which we'll have a policy by then. So that was the first proposal. The second is a green technology. The green technology course would also incorporate into local industry, looking at alternative energies, alternative forms of energy. We do have a booming industry here in Long Island with various alternative energy companies, and this would interest itself towards our environmental students as well as our students that are involved in our architecture classes and our other tech classes. So that would also be a cross-taught course that would hopefully interest those kind of students. questions?
One minute, because we have aerospace, and even though it has new people took it over, I think, in an English company last year, everything that has ever gone up in space, they have been a part of. And maybe somehow we can form a partnership or do something with them, because their knowledge from every satellite, every spaceship that's gone, they've done a part of it. So maybe we could look into that.
My goal with both of these is to be similar to what we've done with North Shore and to start a relationship with local industry and build on it that way. And through the Long Island STEM Hub, this would expand our opportunities. The students would really get real-life applications into these different fields as well.
Yeah. You know, it's so close. I think that
absolutely
maybe we could see what we can do to form that relationship. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Sure. We're good.
And also, I know as part of the bond work, we were going to put in a small solar array, possibly like to power the gym lights or something. So perhaps using our own, that could be worked into the curriculum once it's
Absolutely. That would be part of that green technology.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Great. Thank you.
We figured that we wanted to match up with your board goals. And now I'd like to invite Dr. Lionel Chan from the World Language Department.
Good evening. There are four courses that I'd like to speak about this evening. The first one is Chinese for English Speakers 1. This is a new course proposal that we are putting forward. The reason we are putting forward this new course is because although we've had Chinese for Business-Related Careers and Chinese Language and Culture 1, we have decided to create this new course because one of the major reasons why students give for not wanting to study Mandarin Chinese is because it's there's a general perception that it may be very difficult in comparison to other languages. And, you know, from a linguistic standpoint, that is true. Mandarin is typologically more distant than other languages that we offer, for example, like Spanish and French. So with this new title, where we call it Chinese for English Speakers, it's actually going to, and with the new course description, we really want to attract more students and show them that it is possible and it is doable, and that there are a lot of syntactic connections that we can make throughout the course to help students acquire sentence structure in Mandarin, but also at the same time really describe what are the benefits of studying Mandarin, the importance of it as a language that's going to be very powerful and that already is becoming very powerful in terms of business and technology, and also to describe what the course is going to be like. There's going to be a lot of language learning games. There's going to be technology integrated into the language learning component. So these are all things that, you know, we want to put forward and really attract more students to take. So moving forward, the next course.
Can I just ask you a question?
Sure, please go ahead.
First of all, thank you, because this board has made a commitment to Chinese and trying to bring that program up from just the elementary schools to something that's in the middle schools as well as in the high schools. So I think it's a great thing to try to demystify it and recruit kids to follow that path. Will this be a little bit more conversational as well versus just, you know, this is a word, you know vocabulary as a typical starter classes?
Absolutely. And I was actually speaking with Ms. Garish about this earlier last week. And one of the things that we're going to do differently from what we've done in the past here at Plainview at Bethpage is that in the beginning of the course, we're actually going to do a lot more oral communication in terms of conversational Chinese. This is going to really allow us to give students a feeling of accomplishment right from the get-go, whereas in the past we've started with a more traditional approach, following their textbooks, following standardized curriculum where they go by practicing tones and character writing, which we'll still do in the beginning. However, we're really going to emphasize the oral and the communicative part in the beginning of the course to really make students feel successful in the very beginning.
Awesome. I'll put you on the spot a little bit. When You're the new guy, the new world language chair, if you don't know him already. And we interviewed with him, and one of the things that you enlightened us with was a thought about how sometimes that early exposure to a language doesn't equate to the students following it in the later years. Could you quickly just give a little rundown on that so everyone can hear it?
Sure.
Because I know I'm telling the story wrong.
Absolutely. No, not a problem. No, you pretty much have the gist of it. Basically, there are two types of foreign language programs in the elementary schools. One, which is the model that we have here, which I'll speak about tonight, is called the FLES program, Foreign Languages in the Elementary Schools. And what that program really is that students follow the same language throughout the first couple of, most of elementary school, as opposed to other programs that do other things. So one of the things that they've, for example, in another program, they would maybe study a different language every year. So one of the things that we found is that, you know, in comparing different programs here on Long Island alone, is that when students actually take the same language in the elementary grades for X amount of years, let's say 4 years, 5 years, when it comes time to choose a different language in middle school, what we find is that many of them, even 50%, as high as 50%, as some districts have found, actually end up choosing a different language than the one that they've been studying in elementary school. There are a variety of reasons, and I think the most glaring one is that it's innate to being a child. You know, you've done something for so many years, and now, you know, now that you're being given a choice, you actually want to try something new. That said, at the same time, I think our district has a very, very is very strong in the sense that we actually have chosen Mandarin to be our FLES program. You know, I can't think of, you know, I know of other school districts that have foreign languages in the elementary schools, but they do Spanish or other languages like that. And for us to actually choose Mandarin in the elementary schools, we're actually giving students a very, very strong leg up. Because what about the other 50% that actually does want to stay with Mandarin, you know, and the benefits of developing the phonological patterns, you know, their native-like accents when they're young, you know, especially, you know, if you subscribe to the critical period hypothesis, where when children are between the ages of 0 and, let's say, 7 or 8 years old, actually can develop native-like accents, whereas adults learning foreign languages, it's much, much harder, and the success rate is much lower in terms of developing native-like proficiency and accents. So, you know, we're really, really giving our students here at Plainview Old Bethpage the opportunity to succeed should they want to continue on with this path. And if they want to continue on with something else, we, you know, more traditional Romance languages that are everywhere, not only across Long Island, but, you know, in school districts across the country, so, you know, like Spanish and French, etc. So, okay. So to continue, AP Italian, we have the Italian 2 and 3 would be the prerequisite for this course. This is a course that's very in line with the AP syllabus, and it's a continuation of the sequence that we have in Italian. So right now we have Italians 1, 2, 3. And we would like to add Italian AP for our students who are currently in the sequence. And continuing next is Italian 1. We are modifying this course description to include an SAT verbal section preparation in the course. We would like to, given Italian's close proximity to Latin, we would like to take advantage of that and actually add an SAT verbal preparation component to this class. And finally, sure.
Is this sort of a vocabulary focus? Because my understanding is the new version of the SAT doesn't have vocabulary items at all per se. So I'm just wondering
absolutely
about
this. Yes, it's actually the way we've framed the course description and the way we've envisioned it. It's very lexical-based, very vocabulary-based. That's the component.
But the test, it's a great thing to learn vocabulary anyway. But in terms of the test, though, I'm just wondering about the utility given the nature of the changes in the test is what I'm saying.
Right. We would be connecting Italian words that were the roots of Italian words that are also shared with English. So, you know, in that sense, we would prepare them in terms of being able to deduce the meaning of words that they may find unfamiliar.
They may see on the SAT, but not necessarily in the vocabulary section. I think that's what you're saying.
Okay.
And, we just have one more, the American,
sure. American Sign
Language.
American Sign Language 4. This is the Checkpoint C level. We haven't offered a Checkpoint C level course in American Sign Languages, and we actually have sufficient enrollment to do so now. So we would like to add the American Sign Language 4 class, would follow the state syllabus, and really develop post-intermediate skills for these students.
So on the American Sign Language class, we have not in the past been able to run a level 4, and at some point in time in some of the courses we do a 3-4 section, but it's pretty difficult with American Sign Language to actually do that. And then we haven't had enough students enrolled to create a course. So this would be the first year that we'll have about a dozen to 15 students who are actually eligible to take the American Sign Language 4. So I'm hoping that, if approved, that this actually will run itself for the first time. And as Lauren mentioned, we did have the students the other night at the play, and you saw how proficient those students are at that level. So I can't imagine if they could get to the level 4. So, again, thank you, Lionel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Shen. We actually have just one more new course proposal that I'd like to present to you. I saved the most exciting one, in my opinion, no disrespect to my colleagues here, but for last. It's the AP Capstone program, which Plainview Bethpage is really very excited about being able to bring this program to our district. Many school districts are in the process of applying for it, and we're ahead of the game in many aspects. It was quite a lengthy process last year to go through. We did visitations to other school districts that do have it. The process to apply for it's not like other APs where you just sign up for it. You actually had to go through a process to demonstrate that the school is ready and prepared to take it on. It's a research-based class, so as you know, we have a very strong research program here within our district. Well, this will be supporting that in many different ways. It's going to be working alongside of it. It's a 2-year course program, but you could take 1 year or both years, depending on your interest as well as what grade you start the program at. It'll be open up to 10th, 11th, and 12th graders, and it's a program that will help with critical thinking skills, independent thinking for our students, analyzing issues, and independent research. The first course is called the AP Seminar. And that's the course that I'm proposing at this point in time. The second year would be the AP Research Program. So any of the students that are still available in school and still interested could go on to the research program. So as of right now, we are still determining exactly which teachers would teach the course, from which department they would come from. We are setting up a meeting with other districts that have also been accepted to the AP Capstone program coming up within the next week or so that we could sit down and brainstorm together exactly which way we want to tackle AP Capstone. So we have more to talk about with this, but it's really a very exciting program for our students. And by the way, for those students that complete both courses of it, will receive an AP Capstone certificate. And in addition to that, those students who complete both courses and also score a 3 or better on 4 other AP exams will receive an AP Capstone diploma, which is a very prestigious diploma. Colleges are learning about it, becoming very aware of it, and it's a wonderful thing for our students that are interested in developing those skills.
I'm just wondering about the kinds of projects we're talking about. What's sort of the range of it? Because one of the things I think I like about it is students who maybe don't have a flair, say, for natural sciences or social science. I'm just wondering if this will give them opportunities to do a research project.
Yeah, actually it will, which is really the second year of the course. That's the research course, because the first one is the seminar version of it. The research course could be at that point in time when students identify what kind of projects that they're most interested in, we'll be bringing in teachers from whether it be the math department, the science department, social studies, whichever the case may be, and we'll be breaking students down into those different groups.
One of the things that I would like to see talking about as a new course offering is a course that we used to have, which really was our alternate ed course. It's really those kids that just don't fit in. We don't want to lose children. And somehow when we had a course, we kept them in. There was somebody who had an eye on them. Maybe we have to offer it in a different way. I know it wasn't run this year. But I think that every student counts, and we have to look at what can we find to keep them interest. It may be something during the day, it may be credit after school, it may be something, but I think we have to look at the evolution of it. Why did it fail? Where did we go wrong? But every child is entitled to an education when they come into our schools, and I think it really, the onus is on us to be able to find a way of giving it. And I know, yeah, we have budgetary constraints and everything else, but to lose a kid or to lose two or three kids for that dropout rate that we used to have almost a zero, and last time I started to see that number changing a little bit, I think it behooves us to try to see what we can do to try to offer things to keep the kids in our buildings, keeps them out of trouble also.
Yeah. If I could touch on that a little bit, just so you know, you're correct. We didn't run the program this year. However, we have identified the students who we believed would have been eligible for the program, would have been good candidates to be in alt ed. And working with the guidance counselors and the assistant principals, the social workers, we're keeping track of them to make sure that there's outreach and support for those students so they don't fall between the cracks. I'm also speaking with colleagues from other school districts when I go to my principal meetings with other districts to find out different ways, different models of alternate education. Not that we want to change from the model that we had. I'm not suggesting that per se. I'm just saying we're exploring our options, and we will come back to you at a later date with other ideas that we're looking at to see what would be the best fit for POBJFK in the year 2016-17. I'm sorry, Ms. Lynn would like to add.
Just to quickly add, Dolores Binstock, Sharon Lasher, and myself have set up, are in the process of scheduling some visitations to other districts, so we're just kind of gathering information to bring to Mr. Murray.
Fantastic.
If I could get back to AP Capstone, you know, anyone who's been to these meetings has heard me talking about how I'd like to see us get, you know, more kids being AP, especially when they apply to college, you know, having those three APs, being an AP scholar, being along a program like this. So I'd like to ask that we not look at this as a course at all. I'd like to look at this as an overall multi-year plan that's heavily involved with these other directives that we said the board would like to look at. And I think you can't look at this on its own. It should be looked at as part of a bigger whole. What is the impact on other courses we'd be having? How many kids would we get into it? If there's the move towards the APs from honors that we're going to do that, I think that's part of the discussion to have as part of this whole thing. And I'd also like to urge us not to put our eggs in one basket. I think it's very important that we offer new courses. We have more than one teacher who can teach it, and that goes on for the life of the program as well, so that if a teacher should retire after many years, we don't find ourselves scrambling with a course that doesn't have any instructor for it, where the kids pay the price those next few years when we try to figure out who's eligible to teach it. So I'm very enthusiastic about this program. I just think it's a much part of a much bigger discussion than a course. I'd really like us to look at that, and that's consulting with the guidance counselors. I'd like to really hear about how our college is looking at this. Is it really something that's gaining any traction or not, and how it will help kids when they apply to colleges and impact their ability to get into schools, or will it affect potential scholarship and merit money? There's a lot of things going on, and I think this opens up a very good discussion. I'd like to have it be that broad discussion that we've talked about as a board, and where we decide to go with this, I think, should be tied into those other open areas.
More of just a statement than a question. I want to thank everyone involved for the new course offerings as well as the tweaks. I have four kids, none of which are yet at high school, and one of the things I've been impressed with in the in the short time, relatively speaking, that I've been on the board, is the breadth and array of courses that our high school offers. And you know, I'm excited for my, you know, it's essentially they're going to college and high school in a certain way, at least in comparison to when I was in high school. So, you know, I want to applaud everyone, the teachers, the administrators, the staff, everyone that had input. You know, if you look at our program offerings, it is truly impressive. And although sometimes we need to do a little tweaks and we may bicker or argue about, you know, different issues, different, you know, with regard to curriculum and courses and weighting, and we'll get to that later tonight, I guess. But it really is an unbelievable program. And so I just want to, you know, thank everyone for their efforts, and it's wonderful. So,
those lines, you know, sort of one of my rah-rah moments. One of the things that I was thinking about before was that, you know, as I said, we do have very rich research opportunities for certain kinds of kids, but one of the things I love about this is you might have, say, an academic kid who has a non-standard passion for something, and I think anything that offers a diversity of opportunities to explore something in depth is a really great thing.
On something that Gary was just speaking about, you had said, Mr. Murray, that you are in talks with other districts who have also been accepted into this. Maybe it's something that you kind of form some kind of group with these other districts because you're all exploring it at the same time, and it could be helpful in looking at the bigger picture as to what Gary was talking about. So.
I was at a meeting last week with principals from North Shore of Nassau County, and when they heard that we were accepted to this program, they had already asked, could we come and visit you next year to see how it's going? But yes, I like the idea.
Yes, so I believe it's just one or two Long Island schools who did it last year who were selected to participate because there is an application program. Thanks to Mr. Farrelly, we visited Hewlett-Windmere. We spent about a half a day. We actually went into the courses, spoke with students. I shouldn't say courses. They were just in the AP seminar, so that's their first year. They're on to the AP research this year. With regard to the AP seminar, we weren't going to spend a lot of time talking about it tonight until we actually did reach out to the other districts. And I want to be clear at the other districts who have been accepted. It's Island Trees, Levittown, East Williston, let me think who else, Wantagh, which is John McNamara, and one other district.
Huntington.
Not Manhasset. No, I think that's it for right now that I'm aware of. The AP seminar course, one of the things that I think really interested us is the amount of collaboration that is done in the course. It is student-driven. So although the teacher acts as a facilitator and the topics are chosen by the teacher, they're obviously high-interest topics. A lot of the work has to be done amongst group work. So there's a team project and presentation. There's individual research-based essay and presentation, and then an end-of-course exam. Again, as Mr. Murray said, this course would benefit any child, not only, you know, going through our coursework, but, you know, beyond our doors. So we look at We look at the AP seminar as an opportunity for many students in terms of those inquiry skills to be able to debate an issue, do a presentation on that, public speaking, you know, all of those skills. And I know, like, our public speaking course is up and running from last year. But again, we feel like this is a good opportunity for us. However, the reason why it says TBD on this, because we have not fleshed out all the details. We just were accepted. We just sent back the agreement, and then we need to work through some of the more specifics. So we didn't want to just make a haste judgment on something and present it to you. So we wanted to be transparent in that it's still on the table, but we ask that we come back to provide more details on the 7th.
We look forward to that. just want to talk a little bit about calculus. I know that this is the first year of SUPA, and previously we had a non-college level calculus course, right, and the two AP classes. We eliminated the non-college level course, replaced it with SUPA, which it's my understanding is far more rigorous than the non-college level course was. I've heard us say over and over again that we want more kids taking calculus. You know, it's one of the reasons why we're looking into Algebra for All. By getting rid of that non-college level calculus, haven't we just cut off calculus for a whole group of kids who can't handle the now three very rigorous ones we have? We've basically taken the kids who are, you know, average to slightly above average math students, and we've made calculus unattainable for them. Now they have no choice but statistics. Is that something we want to reconsider? I'm not saying we shouldn't keep SUPA.
We are finding that the students that are taking this class are actually doing really very well.
Okay. And were there any kids who may have taken the non-college level calculus that ended up someplace else that would have taken advantage of?
Potentially, yes. There probably were. But I think that that's due to several different factors. You know, when we talked about how the program was rolled out in the first place, mm-hmm. The communication or in some ways lack of communication. You know, we really could have done a better job, which we all know we've discussed this before, on how it was presented to parents and to students and to the counselors on really what the knowledge that we had of the SUPA calculus course. Had that been a bit differently, then I think that maybe our conversation right now might be a bit different as well.
But what about those kids who might want to challenge themselves with calculus and can't handle those three? We now have three very rigorous college-level calculus courses. So basically only your top-level math students have the opportunity to take calculus. What about the kids who want to push themselves a little harder, maybe try calculus, but can't handle it at that level? They don't have a calculus option.
Well, you know, there are things that you could do. I mean,
statistics is really there.
No, but yes, you know, they could take statistics. They definitely could. But, you know, looking at other school districts, as you saw, we provided that information for what other school districts, you know, are currently offering. And these are the we had it printed out, actually, for the school community. Taking a look at that, these are the futuring districts, the courses that we compared ourselves to when we were futuring or preparing for the future. We could do a lab component. Perhaps with the AP program, giving a greater additional support for those kids that want to challenge themselves, mm-hmm. yet may need additional support in doing so, which is just one option.
Looking into the lab component, how would that be offered? In other words, I understand what Jody's saying. Mm-hmm. When we even talked about, you know, the Algebra for All, there are children who struggle with math from the time they're in elementary school. It's just not their thing. And to not be able to offer something, you know, maybe a smattering of it, a slower pace of it, somehow how it is given to the students so that they can absolutely feel successful. And there has to be a level of frustration. You know, I'm not a math person. And so I could appreciate if somebody were to say to me that there wasn't a place that I would feel comfortable, and that I would be working hard in a place that some people would turn around and say, oh, it's a piece of cake, it's nothing. And I think that when you do have trouble with math, it's a concept that is hard for other people to understand. You know, somebody could say you just have to try harder, you have to study longer. Sometimes you could study and study and study, and you're just not going to get it. You know, sometimes it's the pace that we give to the kids. But maybe a lab would be something that would be a fail-safe to fall back on so that they would have that extra period to review what's going on and to go through, you know, almost a repetition of the day, the course that they just had. Maybe that's mm-hmm. something we have to think about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it could be done on an every other day basis.
Right.
I'm going to jump in because right now we don't have Algebra for All, and about 60% of our kids accelerate. They're the only ones who get an opportunity to take calculus. The way it goes is if you didn't accelerate, you're taking pre-calculus your senior year. So the kids who are good at math are on this track. The kids who aren't good at math, for the most part, didn't accelerate, and they're going to be taking pre-calc their senior year. So when we make that the point you made, if we were in Algebra for All and we had kids struggling, at that point I would say that's something worth looking into. Even if we go to Algebra for All 2 years from now, we're talking about 6 years before those kids are seniors, where they'd have the opportunity to make this decision. Right now, the kids making this decision are kids who were accelerated, who are on a math track, who have abilities that are not, that are in the upper 60% of our high school, given our population. So when we're telling those kids they have to take a college-level calculus course, that's what calculus is. And I don't want to have this superclass come crashing down on us where no one wants to take the calculus, but I also look at the advantage of, you know, you need something like a 73 or a 75 to get the credit for the super course, I believe. So if you're getting 80s in super calculus, you're going to get credit that may not be for all schools, but if you're in that realm of people who aren't math people, it may very well work out very well, just let me, for your school. And I think we have to look at the population we're talking about who this actually applies to. It's not 100% of the population of the school district right now. It's only the 60% who got accelerated, which is, as I've been very vocal, is a number that I feel is much too low for our district to begin with. As far as the conception or misconception out there that AB Calc and Super Calc are the same thing, you know, we've heard discussions, we've talked to people, and we've done research. It's not something that's happened in a vacuum. And while the course is far more rigorous than I'll call the Calc Lite, as one of our public participation people called it last time, it's still, I like that the course is more rigorous and more meaningful, that the kids can get real credit for doing it on a level that I think warrants the work. And when we have courses that don't warrant that level of work and we call them college or college ready, I have a much bigger problem with that. I think all our college, if we call a college course, it should really mean that it matters for the colleges that people who live in this community expect their kids to get into. And I think that's you know, something that we have to get our arms around and work with. And the other point that I wanted to make on this is, you know, we have looked at the results of how the kids are doing. It's been presented to us on the course, and while there aren't a whole lot of kids getting 95s to 100s, there's a ton of kids getting 80s, 85s, and 90s, which to me, on a college-level calculus course, is a great achievement. And I think it should be something we should be celebrating and not saying we've missed the mark on the class.
I just want to bring up as a sidebar, in terms of the grade, if people could just keep it down a little bit, thanks. In terms of the grading, that 73 is for the assessments that Syracuse has signed off on, correct?
Yeah, so for the SuperCalc course, there's actually two systems of grading. First of all, the students in SuperCalculus do not have to actually pay for the college credit. They're just in an actual college-level course here in Plainview. We follow the Syracuse curriculum. For purposes of earning that college credit, you have to earn a 73 or better in the course, and that's based on the Syracuse exams, which are written by our teachers but approved by Syracuse. So there are certain benchmarks that the students have to hit within the course. On the POB transcript, that grade is based on the same calculation any other course, the 20% each of the four quarters, the 7% midterm, the 13% final. And again, that's what shows on the transcript how the child earned that credit. But that's different, obviously, from the 73 calculation that is required for Syracuse based on those benchmarks.
And how are kids doing on those benchmarks?
The students are doing fine. In fact, let me go over the statistics just for purposes of this discussion while we opened it up. We had about 75 students enrolled in the course. Two students leveled to the college stats class, which is truly a college level class. Two other students went to a modified version of that, which is not affiliated with a college, and one student went to a college algebra course. We have currently three students who earned a 96 or better in the course, 25 students who are 91 to 95, 15 students 86 to 90, 18 students 81 to 85, and I'm just going to group these kids together just so I don't pinpoint anyone, but we have seven students who have below an 80. Two of them have an 80, actually. So five left. Only one of those students is not passing the course.
Course as a whole. I'm not asking for statistics specifically on the unit tests, but are the grades similar for the unit tests, or?
I haven't done an analysis on the unit test, and I would have to get back to you as to how many students are actually paid for the college, you know, to be affiliated with the college. But again, each student in the course has actually followed the college-level curriculum, which, again, we believe is important because if they are not taking the college credit and are sitting in a college class, they will be well-prepared, obviously, for that. But I can get back to you with those specific statistics. And then I don't believe that the parents need to actually make full payment until sometime in December. I don't know if I, in fact, will have exact numbers in that, but I could possibly get students with intentions to earn the college credit.
I'm really not going to belabor the issue tonight, but I think it really gets down to philosophical difference of opinion, that I am thrilled for the 60% of the children that can make it from here and go that way. But for the 40% of the kids, we also have to look about how do they feel about certain things being either eliminated from a course because there is no fail-safe for them. You know, when you start to do away with honors courses, it was something that a child could drop down to if he or she had to. And I've been for supporting trying to get our kids to really go as high as they can. But I think that sometimes when we look at it, it's did we have kids who didn't take the course because they were afraid of it, but would have taken something, and it doesn't have to say college level. It could be just a course in that subject area that they get a smattering, a taste of it, and we don't know what the future brings for those children, but I think that it's all well and good to always talk about when we talk tonight about all the courses we're doing and raising the bar and you know, what other kind of AP courses are out there and how we're going to do this and that. Let's also look at those kids that aren't going to your Ivy Leagues, that aren't going to go to your upper third type of colleges, but are going to go to a good school for good education. And I think that sometimes we forget that. And I just want us, as we talk, to realize philosophically we can have that difference as to who believes a child should only take college-level courses and who believes that a child has a right when they go into a high school to feel that they can take a course, and if they can't make it, they can drop down and there's something to be offered for them. And I think that's just a discussion maybe when we talk about Algebra for All that we'll really engage in.
I just want to point out that the 40% statistics had to do with the fact that those children take pre-calc their senior year. They don't have an option of calculus their senior year. They're taking pre-calc. So that's where I was coming from with that number, was just the pure data. I wasn't trying to make a judgment of who's capable or who's not, but that the 40% of the kids are in pre-calc. They're the lower math students by definition.
You have to accelerate at the end of sixth grade, right? You accelerate in seventh grade. So just because somebody is good enough in math to accelerate in seventh doesn't mean they're still performing in that level at 10th or 11th grade. So some of those kids have started to struggle in math since their acceleration. And again, you have cut off the opportunity to take calculus for a significant portion of kids. If they can't handle now the three very rigorous courses we have, it's statistics or nothing. And I don't think that's fair.
I think we should. Maybe.
I'd been under the impression that actually, you started talking about this, I thought it wasn't quite ripe in the agenda because I thought we were getting to this when we were doing the waiting. So. I get where you were going with it now, but I think we can maybe continue some of this discussion when we get to the waiting part, although I brought it up. I don't think it's a bad idea to explore potential options for support for next year.
I'm not saying we should eliminate SUPA, because obviously there are kids who are doing very, very well in SUPA. I'm not saying that we should get rid of SUPA and go back to what we were doing. Exactly. We need more options for everybody, not just, you know, the kids who need rigor.
One of the other discussion items has been about students taking calculus with regard to the Common Core and also the career paths of students. So In the past, I would say the majority of our students actually took the calculus. You see how many sections we have of the AB, BC, and or more traditional calculus in this year's SUPA. On the other hand, we're running one section of college stats. And there is something to be said for students who are not in the math, going into the math science field, but are advanced students in mathematics, that probably should be more encouraged to go the college stats way. And this year we only had one college stats class, so there wasn't a lot of wiggle room, one section, for actually kids to go into that pathway. And, you know, some of the parents that I spoke to with regard to the SUPA class or perhaps took on some other challenging things said, you know what, I think my child actually should have been in the stats class from the get-go. So as Mr. Murray mentioned, you know, there's some things that we could do to better enhance our communication. What is the appropriate course for this child in terms of their career path, in terms, you know, some of the things that in just having these discussions and going back to see how the kids performed in prior years, and perhaps college stats would have been a better choice for them. But
they need to have the choice.
Well, they had the choice, but again, I think some of them just needed more background in terms of what's the involved in each of the courses.
Well, more information is always better.
So I think, again, I don't know that anyone, and I'm not saying that anyone's saying anyone did anything wrong. I just think that we should probably more clearly define what's required of the SUPA course or whatever, and, you know, how AB is different from BC versus the college, all of those options for kids.
I'm just wondering, in terms of awareness, do families whose kids are taking SUPA now know about the payment options? They've all been informed about that? Mm-hmm.
And just to agree with Ginger and Jody on this is I'd certainly say that when we do start something that says an all or nothing start to SUPA, probably in hindsight, you know, could have been done a little differently, where maybe that choice initially is a choice. And then if the regular calculus had died a natural death because the SUPA was such a successful program, we wouldn't be in this spot. So, you know, you can always Monday morning quarterback. And in this case, I would say better to start with the choice, although long-term the goal could be for it to replace it, but replace it based on having a track record, not based on just, you know, what a college university says on, you know, when you're reading their website and stuff like that too, because everyone's marketing and everyone's selling, and it's important to remember that it's got to be the right fit for our district first, and it doesn't mean we can't have that goal in line, but we don't have to rush to it right out of the chute. And I think maybe we could say we rushed to all or nothing a little quickly on this one.
Didn't test the waters, no. Yeah.
But does that mean that we can't offer it next year?
No, of course not.
No, I don't mean the SUPA calculus. I mean the general calculus, unless, you know, unless it's looked into when you're talking about a lab. But I happen to agree, I would prefer not to limit the options of some students.
Jim, do you want to comment any further on this topic?
I mean, you have a tough decision. I mean, you really do have several options. You could, like you said, Debbie, go back and take the old calculus that we had, run that in conjunction with SUPA and the AP calculus. You could have three different versions of it. Yes, four if you're counting the BC, but that would be after the AB. You could go that route and see where it goes, see what the interests of the students are, or you could decide to give support in a different kind of way by encouraging more students with the AP to you know, take the challenge of the AP, but we'll give you the lab component to it. You could do that possibly with the SUPA class as well.
Yeah, again, whatever the decision is, you know, the traditional college, I believe the traditional college calculus class that we offered in the past is in the course catalog, so it's just a matter of resurfacing that. It wasn't run last year. One thing that I think we have to be careful of in this is just the staffing piece. So what are the implications of the staffing? You know, even starting out, the college statistics class, as I said, was running high, so there wasn't a lot of wiggle room there, so perhaps starting that number a little bit lower in case a child chooses to switch, just like they did this year. I would expect that we would still have students doing that. But again, if we're going to start to create all these levels,
you just have to be aware of the staffing implications of that. Currently, you know, we've typically been running three sections of a college calculus course, the generic model. We're running the same amount in SUPA. So when you start to fragment them, we'll just say they split in half. That's a whole another 0.2 teacher. And then same thing if we're splitting the college stats class to give more wiggle room there. That's another 0.2. So, again, I'm not saying there's a right or wrong answer here, but there are implications to creating these levels.
I guess one of the things that's appealing about this is kind of the more granularity you can get, the better. And I sort of felt like the way the configuration was, courses were kind of bunched in terms of skill level at one end and really weren't... it wasn't sort of as evenly spaced as we might have liked. So I think exploring these is actually a great way to make sure that it's sort of like in terms of special education placements, you want to have a continuum of placements, and this is sort of achieving the same thing.
Okay, well, good discussion, more to be had. Thank you, Mr. Murray.
Thank you, everybody.
Narcan. Of which there's nothing for people, so.
All right, Mr. Murray, I'm going to just ask that you stay. You don't have to. You don't have to stay up there. You don't have to. No.
Go in your adorable seat.
No, you don't. You don't need to. We're going to just talk about Narcan for a second. I believe it was on a previous agenda to just talk about exploring it. And I know, I believe Andrea Spector's here right now. Thank you, Andrea and Ellie Becker. So we've been having some discussions about the options for Narcan administration. And there are two different ways that you can actually not administer it, but take on the administration of it. And I know the board has received a memo on this, but there's the option that we're recommending to you this evening is issuing a non-specific order. And that essentially means is that our district doctor issues a prescription to the nurses who are... Sure. Who can administer it? So I'll back up for the public who doesn't know what Narcan is. You're basically administering an opiate antagonist to prevent a child from the overdose. So it can be administered in any setting. If it's administered incorrectly or a child hasn't overdosed on specific opiates, then there's no harm to the child. There's a safe harmless to the nurses or anyone who's trained to administer it. But at this point in time, issuing the non-patient-specific order would just be done by our nurses. And that is our recommendation at this point in time. The second option is that you can be a New York State certified agency where you can train more individuals throughout the district. And although we see that as an option in the future, we are not recommending it at this time until we learn a little bit more about it. Have the nurses, would go through a brief training as they have the certification in this area, but it's not as intensive. And then there has to be a board policy about the administration of it.
I can never find where it is. All right. You are saying that you will reevaluate it at some point in the future. Are you comfortable telling us whether that might be like the beginning of next year so we would have?
Well, I guess after we have the board policy and then our nurses work with our district doctor and then there is some... As I said, brief training.
Sure.
You know, I would see that we could possibly get it off the ground potentially in March or April, depending on how fast you have the board policy. And then they really would only have access to it for a couple of months. I want to be clear. If you become the New York State registered prevention, if you're part of that prevention program, a coach,
a teacher, an administrator, they can carry the Narcan and administer it off-site anywhere once they become part of the training.
Right.
And, you know, there's individuals, not only our students who might, it could be a parent, it could be somebody who just drives up to the school, you know, to the school at some event or participating in some athletic activity. So again, there's...
What's going on?
There's reasons why we might choose to have other individuals become trained and then
right.
be able to administer it.
Thank you.
Emily?
I just wanted to say I think it's great that we're exploring this issue, given that there have, you know, there's been a rise in heroin deaths and heroin use on Long Island, so I think it's really important that we're doing this. You know, as somebody who, well, it's just important that we're doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I echo everyone's view. I think it's important that we do this. What's the next step, though? Do we have to create the policy first and then take the recommendation, if that's what we want to do of the first, do we accept the recommendation and then move forward? How do we move this forward? I mean, we're talking about it, but what do we do next?
I would ask that you accept the recommendation tonight, then create the board policy. While you are working on creating the board policy, we will be working with our district doctor and researching the training component of it. And then once you have the policy in place, we then would work with the district doctor to issue the prescription and have that on site.
Okay, so Barbara will correct me if and when I do this wrong. I'd like to make a motion to add to our new business the Narcan recommendation. Is that right?
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Except the non-patient.
But don't we have to add it to the new business and then vote on it then?
Yeah, but what are you adding to the new
business? To accept the recommendation of the Narcan proposal.
Okay.
What you said. Yeah.
Hopefully for the last time this school year, the LICE protocol.
So, I mean.
Okay, here we go again. So, no, I'm teasing you. So, okay, so at this point in time, I think it was our last board agenda, we had a LICE protocol that was recommended by the school nurses. It was presented to the Board of Education at that meeting. The board members and some community residents weighed in on that recommendation. And then I then went back based on the feedback that was provided and met with the principals and Andrew Spector and Ellie Becker to go over the comments and feedback. As a result, we have a new recommendation to you on the following LICE protocol. Everything is the same except for one modification. If you look at item number 4, letters will be sent home from the school principal to parents of all students in a grade level in which a case of LICE has been identified. Letters will be sent home only once in a 4-week period. So what essentially that means is that one child on a grade level who has LICE, an e-blast would get sent home to the parents saying that there is a case of LICE on the grade level.
Yeah, when we started talking about this last year, I had two goals, or at least thoughts. You know, one, I wanted to ensure that we had a consistent implementation of the protocol. That was first and foremost throughout all of our schools. And two, I wanted that notice and communication to parents was both timely and more broad-based. I think this accomplishes that. So I want to thank the nurses, Central, and everyone else that was involved in it for reevaluating the protocol. I know this is not something that we vote on. It's just a protocol that they're following. But I appreciate, and again, reiterate, I get that it's not a hazard. But it is an annoyance and a nuisance, and I think the more we can communicate and the quicker we can communicate to a broader group of the community, the better. So I just, you know, I want to thank everyone involved. Yep.
So at this point, I will pass the information on to the nurses to put in effect immediately. Keep in mind, this is a policy for K to 12. However, for K through 6 only will the e-blast be going out. Obviously, grade 7 through 12, they're not in the same kind of setting where they're in the same class all the time, and those cases will be handled on an individual basis, and where applicable, people will be notified. In the kindergarten setting, I just want to be clear, because currently the kindergarten, one case of lice, it would go out to the entire building. Is that what you're asking?
I mean, at least that's what I'm asking.
Okay. And again, I want to reiterate that, you know, in all of these conversations, that the importance is to protect the privacy of families. On the other hand, you know, try to be proactive in addressing the issue or the nuisance. And I want to thank the nurses for their participation. And also, you know, we created the protocol that we will put up on the website, as well as an informational brochure that we will be handing out on back to school night next year, so that there's more information and just asking people to be proactive to check their child's head, as typically rice do not lice. What did I say? Rice are not contracted in school settings.
This brings us to public participation. District policy number 1510.1 provides that persons wishing to make comments or raise questions shall, one, state their name and address, and two, indicate on whose behalf they are speaking if a non-resident. The policy prohibits public discussion on matters relating to staff and students at which their reputation, privacy, or rights to due process, or those of others can be in any way violated. Remarks are limited to 3 minutes. I see that we have a full house. I'm sure there are a lot of people who want to come to the mic. I ask that everyone please be respectful when you're speaking, and also be respectful when you're in the audience listening to the comments that people want to make. The floor is open.
Good evening. Susan Stewart, 36 Bluebird Lane, Plainview, New York. So I have actually two topics to ask some questions of you. First, did you receive my email regarding the lifeguarding? That was sent to the Board of Ed. Okay, so lifeguarding by American Red Cross is a 15-class session. There's a strict prerequisite for that. The way it is worded currently in the course catalog, it's promising employment at the end of this class, or potential employment. Should I read it, or do you have it in front of you? Okay, so you can't make that statement. You know, by hiring guards of your own, in Nassau County, you have to have an American Red Cross, possibly a YMCA guard, and you need Nassau County certification required by Board of Health. So these students would not be able to get employment because you do not have a sanctified Red Cross class. So I think that needs to be perfectly clear in that course description. Again, having calling this the Kaplan of Red Cross, I think that's also a little bit of a misnomer. It is a very rigorous class. It's about 32 to 40 hours. Also, you say you're giving CPR AED. Will the children be getting ARC certification? For a Red Cross, you need CPR Pro. It's completely different than what you get as a Good Samaritan. The reason why I know this, as you know, I've been an aquatics person for many years. So I'd like you to take a look at that before you call it lifeguard training. I need to talk about calculus, or calculus light. My daughter had the opportunity. She was an accelerated student. She was a kid who could take a college-level class, but chose not to. because she was already carrying six APs. Why did she need the seventh? Now, some people have pointed out when I made a comment about freshmen usually are not allowed to take more than 12 to 15 credits per their freshman year. If you take seven APs or college combinations of this, you're at 21 credits. Granted, it's over 181 days and not a semester, but if a kid just wants to take one quiet class, let's put, I don't think you can call calculus a quiet class, but one that's not with a college credit hanging over you, why not? It was successful. You can't say that a kid who's taking calculus is slacking. And plus, when I put my kid in sixth grade and accelerated, the promise was for calculus, not college-level calculus. And by and now we also have brand new curriculum, again, in pre-cal because of the cohort who has A2, not A2 trig, but we have to backfill everything. So will they really be ready for a college level, because we're backfilling everything that they didn't get in the other 2 years prior to this because of Common Core, or are we going to follow David Cole, what the College Board, Coleman, and because they're not engineers, we're going to go to AP Stat and not go to calculus. I mean, that's what they say. That's the course curriculum for Common Core. Are we taking choices away? And then are we going to also put into possibly a very overcrowded senior year a lab and against health, against a lab for physics? Where is it going? And you want to do capstone? Right now, with our day, the day we have confined, you can't do labs. It's going to be hard enough to put capstone. Are we going to take that choice away because of that? We had something that was successful. And my last question to you is, how many students originally signed up for our normal introductory calculus who were switched into SUPA without, who had originally signed up and then were pushed into the SUPA class?
The students that signed up for the course, it was listed in the course catalog as SUPA. So it was not the old course in the catalog any longer.
It was online.
Again, it was SUPA. It was listed as SUPA calculus. It was presented to the board in November at this time last year, and it was listed. It was not a choice to take the old.
I might have to disagree with you because I know three kids who were introductory level calculus. Maybe it was a mistake. I'm not sure, but I know of three kids who chose on their schedule in January because it was at that point it was still in the course catalog online. So. But definitely check out and make sure your trainers are really trainers for American Red Cross, because the cost for trainers, are we paying for an American Red Cross trainer? That's a $550 class if somebody's taking it. So, no, Mr. Braco had alluded that another teacher was going to be trained in that. Is it? Right, that's a $550 class. But Mr. Braco mentioned.
Joe, come on.
So what we were thinking is we would have someone do professional development as a teacher that would like to become certified as a lifeguard trainer through the American Red Cross.
So, but then.
Would that be similar to anything else, whether a teacher wanted to become certified in another area?
But our pool's not sanctioned to be a Red Cross site.
Right, but he can.
Right, so you're going to train somebody for a class that they can't teach. Right, but do you understand that?
Susan, I'm sorry, but...
Okay, but you have to understand...
The time's up. Your points were made.
Okay.
Hi, Jack Morrison, teacher at Old Beth Page School. I'm here to just make a brief comment about how saddened I am at the lack of respect that we're being shown in our negotiation process. I can really only relate this the best way I can, and that's to link it to literature. And when my niece, who's now an architect engineer who started her education here at the Plainview School, and I'm very proud to say that. When she was a little girl, we used to read the story Cinderella all the time. And instead of looking at the dress and the tiara and talk about how beautiful she was, we talked about how respected she was when she went to the ball. And when you all walk around our schools and come in our classrooms and talk to us, that's how we feel. We feel like we're being put on pedestals and like we're respected and that you see the hard work that every one of us puts in. And then you go to negotiations with our colleagues and we feel like we're back in the kitchen doing all the work for hours and hours and hours and toiling without the appreciation and without the respect. So I would like you to start showing us what we were promised when we took that freeze last year and that extremely low contract for the last few years, and we were promised because we are touted as being so wonderful. Our kids are doing fabulously. We're in the paper all the time. We follow every program you give us. We're working day and night. I was sitting here just now communicating with parents while I was sitting here in the meeting. And it's time that we're given that respect and that appreciation that you talk about. You know, we all do this out of our hearts. It's not a job you go into because you need to make money. It's a job you go into because you love what you do, and we all have a passion for the children and for what we do. But we also have families, and we have bills to pay, and we live on Long Island where the taxes are going up, and many of the teachers in our district live in Plainview and are paying those taxes. And we need to, you know, be able to put our kids through college and pay our bills, and we deserve to be paid in accordance with how hard we work. And on that, I will end it.
Hi, Judy Nelson, kindergarten teacher, special ed. Mrs. Shulman, you were speaking to my heart today when you mentioned the delayed gratification experiment. Because it was kind of what was in my mind at the time, the experiment where children are offered a chance to have marshmallows, but if they trust the people, you brought up the trust factor, and they delay that treat, they will get more in return. And it kind of hit home with me tonight because I feel like I'm ready for my marshmallows. That's all I have.
Hi, Amy Weisbord Bloom, 36 Diamond Drive. Gary, we've been speaking a lot. I'd like to, since we've been talking about math and making things for everyone, I'd like to bring up social studies again. My son tried the pre-AP. He was recommended, and he wasn't ready. And he went down to the Regents, and I had my parent-teacher conference, and the teacher said to me, "Thank you for coming in. Your son elevated the level of thinking in our class." She said, "He's a really, really strong intellectual student, and I'm really sorry there's no place for him next year." I'm asking you guys to think again about bringing back honors social studies or pre-AP or whatever you want to call it, because you guys say you want AP. And my son wants to take it. He wants to take it in 11th grade, but he needs to be ready. And it's very hard to be ready to take a leap from Regents for 2 years to AP, then from honors to AP. He wants the rigor. There's no place for him. It's very sad when a teacher says that to you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, Nina Melzer, Elementary Vice President, PCT. I also just wanted to reiterate what some of my colleagues were started to talk about. Ms. Nelson, the marshmallows, it's a kindergarten center thing, I think. I was thinking the same exact thing. I just want to tell you that I sit here month after month and I listen to the points of pride and I listen to the funding that we're coming up with for the projects all around the school district that are going to enhance our learning environment, and I listen to the new technology that we're going to be purchasing or getting through grants, and so that every, you know, student will have their own tablet. I see all of these wonderful things coming our way, but it just reminds me that just like the saying that bricks and mortar don't make a home, all of these things in and of themselves do not provide an education for our children. It is the teachers, it is the educational staff, the support staff, and everybody working together that has created all of these wonderful points of pride that our children are participating in all of these programs, that we are discussing all of these advanced placement classes that starts from kindergarten to the ground up. I hear so many different things going on, and I know that we have been fair in the past, and we have taken freezes, and we have done the right thing when it has come to preserving programs for our children. We were also told in the past that, you know, we understand this, we appreciate what you're doing, and when things are better, you know, we're going to work it out. Well, things are better. The amount that you're paying into the pension funds is less. There seems to be all this money for all of these other things. And you say how wonderful that we're doing, but we are not seeing those in our contract negotiations. We have been fair in the past. We've been fair now when we're requiring or asking of things that can be monetary or non-monetary. There's a lot of things that are on the table, and we've been rolling with the punches. There have been so much pressure put on teachers with all of the changes, all of the new programs, the Common Core, trying to help our children navigate the Common Core and all those changes, trying to help parents deal with the stress that they're feeling with the Common Core, the tests. We've been volunteering our time to make concessions to help our students, because those are the important people in our lives here. And we would just really, you know, request that you be fair now. It's that time. Thank you.
Stephanie Nelkins, 55 Acorn Lane. I was wondering if there's any follow-up with the trigonometry book that I gave you last week.
You didn't get it back yet?
No, was
yes,
it?
We are ordering that trigonometry book, but there's two versions of it, which we're currently researching. So,
what do you mean by two versions?
There's an Algebra 2 version, and then there's an Algebra 2 trig version.
So they should be getting both if they're taking both regions.
So,
I think
as I said, we are researching the book.
Well, I'll be ordering both for my son. What else has gone on in terms of the trigonometry piece, in terms of what's going to happen for the kids this year? What's the schedule? What's going on? This class is going on now that the kids really needed prior to being in the first quarter of Algebra 2, and it's happened. So basically, after they did poorly on a test, after honors kids dropped out of the class, now they had classes for it. So what are we doing to be proactive for the trig piece and everything else that we talked about? Is there a schedule? Is there,
there
what's going on?
There was a letter that went out to parents
I got that letter is about those two
review topics.
But those review topics were actually things the kids needed to know,
you know,
in the first quarter.
Mrs. Nelkins, I'll be happy to call you back tomorrow to discuss it.
No, actually, I want to talk about it in public because there's other people here. I'm curious what's going on with the rest of that program. I mean, it just seems that, again, our kids are up against obstacles. This is year after year. There are kids that couldn't do those pieces just because, and it was no fault of the teachers. It was new standards that it was just someone's best guess. So we've had someone's best guess for the past few years. Tweaks have been made in between that were never fixed for those other kids. And then here they are in Algebra 2, and they're missing pieces. And I don't understand why those missing pieces, even pieces, there are missing pieces in geometry. For those factoring, for that algebra piece, it's missing for honors geometry students, okay? Why hasn't that been recognized? It's such an easy fix to say, hey, we understand this is what they have to do, and make sure those kids walk into class on day one that they're prepared of what they need to do to take that class. These kids want to be in honors math classes. This is your path to BC calculus for some of these kids, and their dream is getting cut off short.
As I said, I'll be happy to give you a call back tomorrow.
And as I said, I'm in a public meeting, and I really don't want to talk one-to-one. I mean, I'm happy to talk in addition one-to-one on the phone, but I'm looking for answers. I'm really looking for answers. I've been asking these questions since the beginning of the school year. Every year, I've been asking this for 3 years. What's going on? How are we supporting these kids? I'm sorry, Jill, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but you know what? When you have the kid who's caught in this, okay, what are my answers? What am I supposed to do? Should I be right now finding some tutor to put these pieces in, or are you guys taking care of it? I mean, I need to know, Because I don't believe taking care of it between June 1st and whenever that other regency is actually taking care of anything. That's not a way to learn. The kids have other regencies. There's other things going on in their lives in those 2 weeks that's not the time for them to be crammed in with new material, as is what happened during Common Core Algebra. I wouldn't let my son be part of that. Fortunately, I was able to do that myself. This time, I guess it's going to cost me $100 an hour to fix that. That's a lot of money.
As we've said multiple times, there will be plenty of opportunities for students. You just received a letter, and if you'd let me finish, thank you. You just received a letter explaining some of the review sessions on some of the graphing and factoring topics.
And as I've explained twice, that happened already.
All right.
Staff, if you're not
going
to allow people to answer, there's no point in people trying to answer you. Every time she tries to speak, you're interrupting her.
Gary,
if you want an answer in public, you have to let her give the answer.
The question is about. She's not answering my question. My question is about the missing trig piece, not the missing pieces that were left out of the algebra curriculum. I'm going forward, not backwards. I'm going forward to a regents that these kids have to take. I'm going forward to an ACT that has 4 trigonometry questions on it. I want to know when that's going to happen. And to tell me that it's put into a pre-calc program, well, that isn't just going to work for me. I want details. I want to know what's happening, when it's scheduled for.
Your comments have been noted. Thank you.
Good evening. Jacques Wolfner, 151 Sutton Drive in Plainview. I noticed, I guess it was yesterday, Dr. Lewis was quoted in Newsday about her efforts to reduce the amount of testing and to get more time for education, which is something that I applaud, and I think most of our community is in favor of. Seems to me that excessive testing and teaching the test does not add to education. I've been asked to represent the board at the BOCES Budget Study Committee, and one of the dates will not work for me. I will not be in town on January 12th. Based on my past experience, I will have the information for the meeting, and I will review it and send questions, but I want to share that with the board. And I also suggest that maybe a board member would want to attend the meeting on January the 12th, the BOCES meeting. On that topic, I'd like to find out how many students from Plainview Old Beth Page are enrolled in the Long Island School of the Arts and also in the Doshi STEM School. That may give me some information. Yes, yeah. Both those schools are potentially closed, going to close because of the lack of participation from many of these school districts. And I recognize that it is expensive to send a student to either one of those. Well, actually, the Doshi STEM program is rather economical, and the arts program is more expensive. Also, I want to apologize to Mr. Cunningham. I sent him a bunch of questions, and I didn't get a chance to look at them today. I was in the city, and I had a lot of business dealings. But the questions I had were regarding 8.3, the flexible spending agreement. 8.4, oh, I'm sorry, not 8.4. 8.6, we have recommendations to accept a lot of bids, and I wanted to find out whether those programs were part of the capital program that we had earmarked for the bond issue. And on 8.9, there's some material that's being declared obsolete, but it doesn't say on the agenda what school or what department is involved. At least was the agenda that I looked at on Sunday. And in closing, I just want to wish everyone a good and enjoyable Thanksgiving.
Hi. I didn't know you were with us on testing, Jacques. I would have had you made some phone calls last spring. I'm probably crazy to say what I'm about to say, but so be it. I'm going to venture an opinion on the math issue that you're discussing. And I want to reference Mr. Batan's comment, quite accurate, of the 60% of the kids for whom calculus is even an option. I venture to say those 70s and 80s that you reported as their grades are the lowest grades those kids ever got in their history in the district. And that's the unspoken piece of all of this. And it comes at a time when their focus is on college. And I think that has to be addressed in the discussion of this issue. You can't get out from under the fact that these kids are motivated by grades, and you just can't forget that. That said, this evening, board members referenced any number of wonderful things that go on here in the district day in and day out. The plays, the Project Challenge, and all of these things that we listen to night after night. Mr. Weinstock needs a raise. Mr. Oliveri needs a raise. These teachers who are here tonight and teachers who will be here every time the board meets until there's a satisfactory resolution of this contract, they need a raise. They've stood up. They've done the right thing. They have not allowed their anger and bitterness at their treatment to affect their teaching of the children. It's time for the board to do the right thing by these people.
Hi, I'm Diane DeLuca from Pasadena Elementary. I just want to say one quick thing. I love my job so much. I feel truly honored and blessed to have the job that I do. I love going to work every single solitary day. And the truth is, if I didn't have to, I wouldn't get paid for it. I don't need to be paid for this job, but I have to. So if I could, I'd say, it's so great, don't pay me for it. But that's not real life. That's not how it is. And it's not how it is for the rest of us. And I completely agree with Ms. Melzer. It's just time. And we really have done the right thing. We love our jobs. We do the right thing. Just work with us.
Hello, Zoe Freiman, 51 Shelter Hill Road. I just wanted to discuss briefly the thing about the honors level classes that were eliminated. I think there's a lot of reasons why that was a great thing for a lot of kids. You know, Susan was right. There's kids who maybe they could do every AP class, but we want them to have a balance in their life. And some kids thrive on that pressure, and some kids really start to unravel. And maybe, you know, even though they would do great in AP Calc, maybe because they're taking this other rigorous course load, they need a place where they don't have to, you know, work themselves to that extreme. And, you know, to have labs is great, but we have an 8-period day. And there's only so much time, and that doesn't allow you time for maybe something you want to try. Because I tell my kids, you know, if there's a class, you got all these electives, why not try it? Well, there's no time to try it. And if you need a lab, then there's less time. And if you're special ed, there's less time. And some special ed kids are brilliant. They're just not learning in the same way as everybody else.
So they need opportunities, you know, and you really need a tiered system. You need it for the kids who maybe need some breathing room. You need it for the kids who don't know that they can do it, and maybe an honors class would be a good step forward. And from there, you know, they feel a little confident, they'll take a next step. But, you know, years ago I had a friend in another district who only had AP and Regents class options. And she's like, you know, you guys are really lucky. But when you look at the numbers and you look at districts only as numbers, it looks like they have more AP papers than we do. And I really hope that's not part of the equation. I hope that we're not looking at numbers and not at kids and their opportunities to stretch themselves, but not be under this intense pressure. They are under tremendous pressure. And what a shame if they can't do sing after school, if they can't do a sport, if they can't do anything except for focus on getting a 95 in every AP class. Because for those kids, an 80 will throw them over the edge. I mean, it sounds crazy, but they're at that age where, you know, they don't have a perspective on life. And my father always says, in 50 years, it won't make a difference. Whatever the problem is, in 50 years, it won't make a difference. They don't have that perspective. They need choices, and I understand we want them to strive to do their best. And we want, you know, what arises to the highest level. But they're not little adults. They're kids. They need a balance in their lives. So I hope you guys take that under consideration.
Hi, I'm Laura Levine, 146 Northern Parkway West. I don't know how many levels you can have for any given subject. There, you know, you could make five different calculus levels and you won't satisfy the needs of certain students. So I don't necessarily have an opinion about exactly how many levels you have to have. My son is in SUPA. The issue simply was that children in the course that fed into that course were not properly prepared. They just didn't have the prereqs. So keep SUPA, don't keep SUPA. My feeling is that as far as honors levels and Regents levels, I have thought for a long time, and I'm at the end of the road now. My youngest is graduating this year. The Regents courses need to be stronger. And I think that the base level is just way too weak, and that's why students feel that they don't have a choice to go from an AP course to a Regents course. And having had a student who went the route of the, you know, million AP courses and primo violinist and all of that stuff, and people talk about the look in their children's eyes, it is very real and it's very tough. So for those students, they do need a place to go. But if you're only offering AP and more AP, more AP capstone, more AP involvement with the College Board, that pressure will mount. And furthermore, when it comes to college, the colleges look at what's offered at the school and what you avail yourself of. The more that we put in, the more pressure there is to take more of that. And that's difficult. So I favor strengthening programs from elementary school all the way up. And I don't know, for whatever that's worth, that's what I would say.
Thank you. All right, we thank everyone, and now we'll get to do I have a motion for... Well, wait. Routine business. Emily? Ginger? Hold separations?
Make a motion to table 8.7.
Do I have a second to that motion? Okay. All those in favor of tabling 8.7? 8.7 is tabled. Do I have a motion for all other routine business now that 8.7 has been tabled? Yes. So all those in favor of all the other routine business. Thank you very much. Okay. Rich, do you want to answer some of the questions for Jacques? New business is going to be, that's right. That's
sure.
Right. That's right. This ain't over. Okay.
Jacques, you had asked how many students we have involved at the BOCES programs. We have none in the STEM program, but we have three in the Long Island program for the arts, the Long Island High School for the arts. I don't know the grade, Ginger, but I know that's three people, three students, I should say.
All right. Item 8.3, flexible benefits. I think your question was, what's the amount and what is entailed? Certain employees can elect to participate in flexible spending, sometimes also known as cafeteria accounts. It's a pre-tax deduction from their payroll. It costs $3.75 a month to administer, or $45 a year. Employees can, as according to federal guidance, allocate $2,550 up to $2,550 for the 2016 calendar year for reimbursement of health expenses, or $5,000 for child care. We've had these agreements for years. We have to update the contract annually. 8.6. Item 8.6 is the approval of a Matlin boiler replacement project. That wasn't part of the bond. That's actually part of our interfund transfer to capital allocation approved by voters in June 2014. And lastly, 8.9 had to do with disposals at Matlin Middle School. That was put forward by Mr. Donnarumma, the principal.
Okay, new business. 11.1, do I have a motion for a field trip for the cheerleaders? Debbie? Ginger? Discussions? All those in favor? All right, 11.2, high school grading. Do I have a motion for the committee to approve the grading committee's recommendations? And we will have discussions. So it's just a motion. Ask away, because, you know, I'm terrible at this procedure stuff.
Yeah, so I actually don't know the right. Yeah, there are five recommendations contained within there.
Let's knock them down one at a time.
Can we break them down?
Absolutely.
By recommendation?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
So then you'd make a motion on each recommendation.
Okay, yep.
Correct.
So I'm going to skip the one for last. Midterm and Regents final exam weighting. Midterm exam is always kind of 7%. The Regents final exam is 13%. Recommendation. Consistent with our current practice, leave it as is. Do I have a motion to adopt the midterm Regents final exam weighting as proposed? We don't even have a motion for it.
And then first, I'll make a motion.
Debbie? Ginger? Discussions? She beat you to it.
Okay. We had one Regents exam this year that was sort of surrounded by controversy. The algebra Regents had this, you know, insane curve. You had a handful of what?
No, this is the weighting in general. Let her go. Let her speak.
Okay. Well, this is not about the algebra. This is about Regents
in
general. So you had the you threw me off my game, Seth. so you had the ridiculous curve.
The minutes were pecked, and I apologize.
And you had the handful of schools that sort of, you know, found that loophole that allowed them to give the second exam. I am concerned that we're going to be sitting here at this table next year talking about the same problems with one of the other Regents exams. And I, you know, there are some school districts upstate who have said, rather than just do this once a year every time we have problems with the Regents, let's just say that until the state gets their act together, that we're just not going to count these in GPA. You know, until the dust settles and the state, you know, I'm not confident that that loophole has been closed. I'm not confident that they're going to, you know, heed the advice of the school districts who wrote about the curve. I really think that we are going to be having the same conversation next year. So I would be in favor of again, not a permanent thing, but just until things settle down and these Common Core regions sort of find their way, that we maybe consider, you know, pulling them out of GPA or reducing the weightings.
I think there's sort of, the differences between us are sort of nuclear option versus scalpel, I think, on this issue. My issue is kind of particular to this exam, and I think, number one, there were tremendous problems with the curve. We wrote to the state. We got no satisfaction back from it, and I think it's a cohort that's been really affected by this repeatedly. So particularly in this case, I would really like to see us do something about removing the weighting in this case. I'm not sure I'm there yet on, yeah.
7 and 13%, we have 5 of these to get to.
Okay.
Make any points you want, but we're only going to vote on the 7 and the 13%, one thing at a time.
Right. So for this particular, so that's what we're saying is we're going with the scalpel here. Yes. What am I missing?
This was on the general regions and exam.
And I have no issue with the 7% with the midterm.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Because we control the content of the midterm exam. Right. It's the regions exam that I don't have the
right. I know we're all rushing to get to the second recommendation, but.
Right.
But the first recommendation, just so I'm clear, because maybe I'm not, final exams themselves count for 13%. So we're talking not just about the regents or the Common Core regions. We're talking about all final exams. Am I wrong? Did I get that?
But my only objection is to the Common Core regions. My objection is not to anything final exams. I have no issue with the midterm.
So just so I'm clear, you're saying take away the regions. You're proposing to take away the regions from the
weighting.
The weighting.
Any part of
the average. Any final exam, you're okay with keeping it as 13 and 7%, 7 and 13. Okay. I just. Okay.
While people are upset at what other districts did, the content that was on the regions we're talking about was not bad content. The teachers said we taught a course. It was a tough test. There were tough regions some year. There were easier some year. But this was fair and accurate representation of how the children did. What's different is they didn't have the opportunity of taking in overly easy regions that allowed them to maybe increase their grade a little bit. But to say that this test is to dismiss all regions just because actually a regents was on point for a change and represented what the kids were doing in the class more accurately, I don't find that discussion valid at all. If you don't count the regents, why are the kids going to work and you're just going to start a downward death spiral, I think, of just ignoring finals as well. I'm just not comfortable even approaching that. They gave a recommendation of the 7% and the 13%. Other districts count regents as much as 20% for the most part. There was one that does 10, but, you know, it seemed like the committee was, this works and we should keep it going forward, and I'm okay with that.
So, when we get to the next topic, I think, you know, I share Ms. Campagna's concern, and I think we need to address it. But with regard to putting the exception to the, you know, I don't want the exception to disprove the rule. 7% for midterm, 13%, I think the recommendation makes sense. I think it makes sense to have the final exam or the regents representing the cumulative knowledge of a student throughout the year or throughout the course. I don't think we should use the exception to disprove the rule. I agree with that. But I do think when we get to the next subject about what happened for this specific cohort of students, that's the next topic. You know, I share the same concerns, you know, that Jody brings up.
All those in favor of on the first one, the district, the committee's recommendation of 13% region, 7% midterm to maintain it. All those in favor. All those against. All right. Next is the one that's a little bit more controversial. It's algebra results, specifically with Common Core algebra. To be perfectly out there, when it first came up, Dr. Lewis did float out an idea there of, you know, a potential weighting on that region. So, if, you know, 5% for Common Core. In fact, she expressed it, and correct me if I'm wrong, is 5% for all Common Core regions because she felt that they're at a higher level and that because they're at a little higher level that a curve could be considered appropriate, you know, for our district to do. Of course, the actual execution of that may not be as easy, but we have a motion to talk about this because I don't think we even know where we want to go as far as this. So a motion for purpose of discussion, Common Core algebra results. Ginger? Seth? Start talking, people. Who wants to go first? Go.
So I just would like to thank the committee for meeting. I don't want you to think that this is going on, you know, we're not disregarding anything. I know this is a well-thought-out committee, and you worked very well together. I think our hearts are trying to reach out to the students that felt like they kind of got the raw end of the stick, being that other districts kind of found this loophole. And I think, I'll speak for myself, I feel that they did. So I just feel that as a result, they could have had an option. They didn't get an option. I feel like Dr. Lewis did come to the table and make a suggestion, and I think we should be open to the fact that we could do something with this Regents. Not all Regents, but we take a look at this Regents.
I already sort of stole my own thunder before, but something I said in conversation with, actually the other esteemed board member said in conversation with me, was that there are an awful lot of mandates that we're stuck with and things that we have to enforce, and we don't have a whole lot of control. And I feel that this is something that we do have a little bit of control over to kind of rectify what that cohort has been through. And I think it's just really unfortunate what they've been through. And I think if we can mitigate, we should.
So we've written a letter. We've talked about this. We've been upfront about our unhappiness with how some districts, albeit only a few of them, have worked around within a loophole in the system. I agree, there's certain things that we can't control, there's certain things that we can control, but I have a different recommendation, and it's not about weighting it. We know that there are other school districts that have experienced the same thing, and one of them neighbors on the South Shore to our west, Belmore, I think, Belmore. They sent out a letter in September. In the letter, they said, because this is a unique situation, their district will, for this test only, count the exam if and only if it positively affected the student's final grade. However, if the Regents exam brought down the final grade, it would be discounted, and the four marking periods would count for 25% each in their new calculation. It then describes that they're going to amend transcripts, or they're in the process of doing that. Now, I know we have a different breakdown in terms of the value that we give to the marking periods, but I think the idea is the same, and I think for this test only, under these circumstances, that may be the best solution. Use the Regents exams for that student if it works. If it doesn't help them, then discount it and spread it across equally among the four. It's within our control. We all said that. We can't control what the state education department does. But in order, under these circumstances, to more even the playing field for our students and not have it negatively impact them, I know I often defer to the committee's work when it comes to something that's purely academic, purely curriculum-based. I don't view this one as one that's purely academic and curriculum-based. And I don't view it that way for all the reasons that we've been talking about. State education, how they, the botched rollout of virtually everything associated with Common Core. I think that's a solution for this specific instance, for this specific group of students. I don't believe it sets the precedent. We've always talked about whenever there's a new issue that pops up, I think Ms. Campagna's right. I do worry that we'll be here talking about another test in the future, but we can't speculate. We can only deal with what we have right now. And so right now, we have a group of students that might not be negatively affected and impacted. And I think this is something that we can do to ensure that the playing field is as even as possible.
I agree. I was the esteemed board member that Ms. Shulman referred to. And thank you. I just think it's something that's in our control. And
I would like to give our students the advantage of that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was a perfect storm when we saw everything that was happening.
We sat here and we talked about what are we going to do for the students once we found out that there were three districts that found a loophole with the state and they were able to do it. And I, you know, Jody, I think maybe we might be here next year talking about it. But the whole thing is at least let's get through this group of children and then start to think what we're going to do. But I think that we have to have a solution, and we really and truly, the kids deserve it.
I'm going to say that the thought of retroactively going back for one test for one group in one grade just scares the hell out of me. I think we're opening a precedent, and it's Pandora's box, and there's going to be other regencies that are going to be horrible for whatever reason, and we are just basically saying every time one of those regions come about, we're going to retroactively make a change that just affects those kids who took it. And that's not the kind of integrity that I was brought up to have. And you guys can vote on this any way you want. And I'm not saying you don't have integrity. But I'm saying I believe in the integrity of the transcript and in our programs. And I just worry that we're opening up something that is just, you know, I'd be more comfortable if we were going to say all going forward, all Common Core algebra tests are going to have some kind of weight. And then we're also going to go retroactive for those kids. But to go back and do something just for this test because it didn't work out because other district gained the system or something happens, there's always a test. There was a physics test. Please stop. If you guys are going to talk, we're just going to – we've asked this, okay? We're having the discussion. We welcome the public here. We got to work this out amongst ourselves. We've heard public input from a lot of people. Now we've got to get this out. This is why we have these discussions in public. We ask that you allow us to have them. I think we have to be extremely careful about the precedent that it sends. And our teachers worked very hard to create a curriculum for this group 2 years ago. This was the second year of the test, not the first year. We're saying that this group is the cohort that's been punished and beat up. That is not correct at all. This cohort, this is the first Common Core test they've ever taken. They have taken no other Common Core tests. They won't till they're, you know, they will now along their math progression, but they are not the kids who are taking in the Algebra 2 trig. And are we already going to say that now we know Algebra 2 trig is going to be bad because we see this is going to come in, so let's retroactively just let's curve this one too? I don't think you know, doing this piecemeal. If you want to make a policy that's going to say this is how we're going to treat Common Core or some tests, I'm okay with it. But I think it's a real dangerous, and it is a precedent to go back and change one test on the way it's considered for everything. And that's just one man's opinion.
Yeah, I don't view this as a discussion about Common Core like you do. I view this as you have an unequal playing field among students in the same level within our region. And so I actually think it would be the wrong approach to say give a curve to all Common Core regions, because I think then you're diluting the results everywhere. You're just artificially elevating them, whatever it is. But to me, the conversation is not about – this is not a Common Core conversation. We could have a Common Core conversation, but this is not about Common Core to me. And this is not about whether the test accurately and fairly evaluates or assesses a student's knowledge about the information it's taught. It's about allowing kids who didn't have the same opportunities or alternatives that others have, albeit we acknowledge it's a few, but then you have other school districts that are addressing that. And this is about just addressing this. So that's why I don't think this is a precedent that's being set. It's a specific incident with regard to a specific group. I mean, listen, we can blame state ed for it, right? I mean, they were unclear. We can blame state ed for a lot of things, but they were unclear, and they had a very lackadaisical enforcement of their rule. And so, you know, I don't think this is Common Core. You know, respectfully, I disagree with you on that issue, but I do believe that in order to level playing field for this, and if we have to address another issue in the future, we will. Just because in this instance, for this reason, if a majority of us say do something, that doesn't mean that we're bound to do something in the future, because it's not going to be the same set of facts and circumstances, and we have to evaluate that on a case-by-case basis.
I'm more with Gary where I'd like to see sort of the broader policy, which is what I was trying to do with the first one, and I know we already voted, but and I agree with you, this is not about Common Core. To me, the things that made the test unfair had nothing to do with the content of the test. It was the curve, and it was that loophole. Now, one thing that I do want to bring up regarding that loophole is you have to remember that the handful of districts that did this got away without even a slap on the wrist. Every other district saw that. If you think that next year with the geometry regions being the first year that only, this is the first year that the geometry regions, only the Common Core version is supposed to be given. Unless state ed really tightens that loophole with their instructions, I would be willing to guess that you're going to see a lot more schools take that chance because they saw those five or six schools get away with it.
But we can't make a decision based on speculation. We can only make a decision on what's currently before us. This is what's before us. If there's an issue going forward next year, we'll address it then.
I think, yeah, whatever the loophole was or whoever, school districts called the state and the state said, yes, you could do it, and they did it. I think maybe there has to be articulation amongst all of us as to what are you doing as a school district, what are you doing? And we call our neighbors. We should have those relationships that we can find out exactly what is going on, and then everybody does the same thing. This is a very unique situation that happened. It really is. And regardless of what happens this evening, we will be looking further down the road to see what other tests are coming or whatever else data is really going to mess up, because they are basically the ones who created the situation. We talked about when the kids, whatever mastery was, and that they lost points so that our kids didn't hit mastery. We talked about how unfair it was, to the delivery of the test and everything else. And if this is our only ability to correct a wrong and help our kids, I think you have to go and err on the side of kids. Yeah.
I make a motion that for the 2014-15 group of students who took the Common Core Algebra 1, that you count the exam if and only if it positively affects the student's final grade. However, if the exam brought down the final grade, it is discounted and the 13% is split up equally among the marking periods for a new calculation.
Seth, I just want to understand you correctly. Currently, we have a 7% midterm, so you're dividing the 13% in the four quarters.
I'd be more comfortable with giving the 5% bump on it that Dr. Lewis recommended than the direction you're taking on this, but I'm going to be the no vote, so I guess it doesn't really matter. All those in favor of the proposal as read? There we go. And all those against? Midterm weighting for geometry and U.S. history. They have recommended no changes to the current weighting. Do I have a motion? Debbie?
To accept the
recommendation of the committee. Second? Discussions? All those in favor? Midterm weighting if no exam is given. The recommendation is when there is no final exam for half-year courses, each marking period counts for 50% of the grade. When there is no midterm final for the full-year courses, each marking period counts for 25% of the grade. All those in favor? Motion. Need a motion. Emily? Ginger? Discussions? All those in favor? See, some of these were easy. College course weighting. This was recommended weighting college-level courses the same as honors-level courses, 5%. Do we have a motion? Debbie? Emily? Discussion?
Yeah.
Go.
Why wouldn't we weight it like an AP course? Can you just explain? Isn't a college-level course, as far as rigor, pretty much the same as an AP course?
No, it's not the same. And that was one of the discussions that came up with the committee. So, as you know, with the AP course, it's all based on that one grade at the end of the year, where the college level course is based on multiple opportunities to take an exam and do better in the course. You know, as you know, they need to get the 3, 4, or 5 to earn that credit. In addition, the level of rigor based on the college courses that we're offering is much more substantial compared to the college courses that we're affiliated with. In addition, the AP exam is a standardized exam that's not written by our faculty. It is graded off-site, so not graded by our faculty, where all our other college exams are locally written. Yes, they need to, you know, some of them need to be approved by the colleges while others do not. It's just a general approval by the college that we submit a syllabus. So they are significantly different in most instances.
Okay. Given that we're now giving honors weighting to the college courses, does that mean that some of them are going to be relooked at in terms of what's being taught?
I want to say yes, but when it's a college affiliation, so that in some ways the college that we're affiliated with determines that level of rigor in the course. So, for example, I think you could be referring to the world language exams. They're really like a level one at the college level, where we're calling it, you know, Spanish 5H. So there's not a whole lot, like we're not going to make it a level five Spanish course when it's really the college level one. So, I mean, if there's a recommendation to not offer those courses at that level, then that, you know, but we can't change the college level description of
the
course.
No, but I think the recommendation is to see that they're leveled up to being a college that's the kind of college our kids would aspire to, and that the level of the credit, you know, the level of the coursework is truly college work. Because the example that, you know, there's no data empirically because we just don't track those things, but I know a lot of kids who took that Spanish level or course, and when they had to take the entrance exam of whether it's going to count or not at their school, found that it didn't. And these aren't kids who are going to Harvard. So if the credits aren't going because you can't pass the basic competency course, then, you know, to me, I get it's a course, and I get we're about to give it weighting, but to me that's a bit of a farce. And I just like that we would reanalyze all those courses. If we're going to do this, which I support, we need to truly make sure they have that level of rigor. And if that course doesn't have that level of rigor, then we should not be giving it as a college-level course, I agree with. But I think we should rather find other programs better to align ourselves with.
Yeah, we've been talking a lot about SuperCalc, but I'm glad that we're acknowledging that the recommendation doesn't just apply to SuperCalc. While it does, it applies to the other college-level courses. So, you know, here, unlike the one that generated previous discussions, I view this more purely curriculum and academic base, which is why I defer to the recommendation of, you know, the standards, the pace, the content of the educators with the input from the parents. So,
and I just want to clarify, we are not doing anything retroactive. This is from this year forward. It doesn't affect anything back. There's no recalculating transcripts. This is just going forward. College courses are going to have a 5% weighting.
Starting this year
with this school year. Yeah.
So this is
so
current marking
and any
period.
College courses. Mm-hmm. Well, it's in the final grade, the 5%.
Final, right.
Yeah. Okay. It gets calculated at the end.
All right.
Exactly.
Okay. All those in favor? Cool. Rocking and rolling. In summary. Oh, okay. We got them all done.
Yes.
Yay us. Appointment of deputy purchasing agent. Do I have a motion? Debbie. Lauren. Discussion? All those in favor? nomination for New York School Board Association Area Director. Do I have a motion?
No, we don't. We can decide not to nominate anybody.
And no one here is being nominated, correct?
No. All right. So. Want to nominate any of those?
I don't feel like I know. I don't know enough. I don't know enough.
So let the record show: no one proposed it. Okay. So no one seconded. Additional staff development proposals, 2015-16. Do I have a motion? Emily. Ginger. Discussion. All those in favor? Consultant service agreement. Do I have a motion? Seth, Debbie, all those in favor? Do I have a motion to go into an executive session for matters of personnel? Wait, no, no, what? Wait. Oh, that's right, the exception. The proposal, which is, do I have a motion for accepting the NARCAN proposal from Emily? Do I have a second? And to direct the development, the administration to develop the policy. Exactly as Barbara instructed you to write it down. All those in favor? All right. Now, do I have a motion to go into executive session for matters of personnel? Emily, that's it. She's the only one that's leave. Lauren, all those in favor? Thank you very much. I know it's been a long evening, folks. Happy Thanksgiving for everyone. See you on December 7th.